kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Weekend show, so reviews are going to be coming a little bit later because we got a lot to take care of right off the bat. Joining as usual, Cole. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm not joining as usual, though, because I'm not usually here for weekend shows.
Well, the weekday show. I can't even keep these fucking things straight anymore because I record them on the weekend, so I refer to them as the weekend show, but they release on Wednesday.
Yeah, but I'm usually on I guess technically
you're on the Saturday shows.
I'm on the actual weekend show.
Yeah.
And then I don't know.
You're on the even numbers.
Disappear for the for the other ones. I just don't exist.
Well, you're welcome to join me for all the reviews that I record.
No, it's okay. I'm good.
That was a quick no.
Yeah.
we talked about it on the last episode. The XO 18 event happened this weekend. Big Inside Xbox event happened today as we're recording this on Saturday. And 2 hours packed with news, announcements, reveals, a lot of good stuff. And
Before we get into any of the new stuff, though, did you see those Sugar Skull controllers?
No, I didn't.
Hold on. We'll wait while you go look this up because it's so pretty. They only made 15 of them.
Only 15?
Yeah. Go to Twitter. Go to James Shields' Twitter. He's the one that's responsible for making all of the special controllers. That's his territory.
All right. So let me pull this up. It is helpful that his Twitter name is Shields James.
Yep.
Razer. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I told you.
That is a sexy controller.
I told you. They only made 15 of them, though.
Damn.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. Because I'd have bought that motherfucker. With the quickness.
Well, you can't.
Nope. I believe they were for the FanFest event down there.
Yeah, probably. They were giving away shit like crazy. Like, during the Inside Xbox event, they gave away an Xbox One X to some kid in the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, it's the 1 year anniversary.
Yeah. With Gamescom and stuff like that, they always just like, oh, here, you want a 65-inch TV? Have a nice day. And you're just like, oh, okay.
Do I just carry this with me the whole show, or what?
That's what I always
wonder. What do I do?
Like, how do you go to something? Like, you always see people prep to get gear at Gamescom and packs and stuff. You take a backpack, you know you're gonna get
swag.
I'm
expecting like keychains and gift bags and water bottles, but a goddamn 65-inch TV.
What it happens if you go buy the Xbox and the Mixer was Mixer during Gamescom had it set up. Where if you came and played Fortnite at the Mixer booth and you won, you got your choice of console right there on the spot.
Damn.
No questions asked. Which one do you want? The only thing is that they eventually ran out of Xboxes and PlayStations and had to give away Switches.
That's still a goddamn good prize.
Right? All you had to do was just win while you were sitting. And you could try as many times as you wanted. They didn't care.
Jesus.
Just come play. Come win.
Damn. Yeah.
They don't fuck around. They give out some serious prizes at those.
I wouldn't bitch about a free Switch. I would, you know, keep one for home, take one on the road, or give one to my family, let them play.
Or me.
We'll see. You could win your own goddamn console at Fortnite. You're probably better at the game than me, considering I don't play Fortnite.
I did play Fortnite, but only while I was learning to play other Battle Royale. Like, I played it with Suda just to convince him that he should play PUBG. And it worked.
Hey, whatever works.
So, you know. Anyway, back to what we were supposed to be talking about, though.
Yes, the XO 18 event. A lot of news happened. We're just going to go through the Inside Xbox show as it happened. I have notes of everything that went down, all the big stuff. I'm going to leave out a lot of the fluff because there was a lot. Like, they could easily cut that down to an hour-long show and leave out half the bullshit.
That wouldn't be as fun, though.
It might be more fun because it's just news, 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 news. Instead of news, let's talk and show promo videos for 20 minutes. Here's some shit you don't care about. Here's a fifth trailer for NBA Playgrounds 2K.
There were a lot of trailers for NBA Playgrounds, and the first NBA Playgrounds wasn't that great.
Well, the event was brought to you by NBA Playgrounds, too. So
was that, it?
Yeah, that's why they showed it so many times.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes far more sense.
Yeah, at the very beginning, there was a little logo in the corner that's like, brought to you by NBA 2K Playgrounds 2. Whatever the tagline is, blah. It's in the game. No, that's EA.
That's EA. That's the wrong. There goes any chance of getting NBA Playground Goats.
Hey, we already covered the game, so. Yeah, Royal covered it. He enjoyed it.
Oh, okay. I don't do the sports balls.
Yeah, I kind of figured. I was going to ask you if you wanted to do it, and then I'm like, no, she'll probably be like, I don't understand what sport balls are.
I don't know how to ball with sport. That's funny when you consider that I play Rocket League and it's technically a sports game.
Yeah. That is very much sports ball. Anyway, we are off topic here.
Of course we are.
First thing that was announced at XO18 is, I guess, kind of to make up for PUBG going to PS4. On Monday, it's joining Game Pass.
I think this is one of the best things they could have done for PUBG.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, the game...
It's been a year. I'm sure the people who wanted to buy it already bought it. So now give it out on Game Pass and let everyone play it. And who knows, maybe it'll stay on Game Pass because it's technically published by Microsoft.
Yeah. Yeah, I figure it'll probably linger there for a good long time. I don't see it being something that gets pulled. And on the plus side, they got that sweet new $45 DLC for it.
Oh, Christ.
So, you know. I
forgot about that.
If you don't want to pay $30 for the game, you could turn around and pay $45 for two skins.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You come out on top. I don't understand. I have opinions on why the marketing is allowing for that kind of price for just skins in a game.
What's your thought?
Basically, it's just a Fortnite has set up a market that will bear that kind of burden. I mean, people pay $20 and $30 for skins on Fortnite every week. They don't care. If you play it a lot and you want to collect the skins, then you cough up the price for it.
People have bought consoles specifically for the skins that are included in it.
So, I mean, clearly there's a market that will bear that kind of burden.
Yeah.
And it's just basic economics. If the market will allow it, then by all means, put a $45 price tag on it and let it go.
And Doc Havoc, as the saying goes, a fool and their money are soon parted. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And I mean, there's definitely games where I have paid for microtransactions for cosmetic stuff. But I'm a cheapskate. And once you get like beyond $5, I'm sitting there going, oh no, baby, what is you doing? but I can understand why people do if it's something that they play frequently and they really like the skin. Look, I'm not going to lie. There's a skin for a gun in Call of Duty Black Ops 4 that I fucking want. It's a unicorn. I don't even use the gun. I just want the skin.
Yeah, you were saying on the last show.
And I checked to see how much it would have costed me.
Would you say $40? Something
like
that? It
was going to be $40, and I had to say no.
Yeah, it's a smart move. But yeah, PUBG joining Game Pass, I think it's a smart move. And it is the first of 16 games that they announced are going to be joining Game Pass over the coming months.
With a lot of games announced, a lot of games,
and a lot of new games being announced that are going to be hitting Game Pass. Like the next game that was shown off, they showed a trailer for the game Void Bastards, which will be on Game Pass on launch. It is a console launch exclusive, launching sometime in 2019. Not sure when, but when it does, it'll be on Game Pass.
Nice. Yep. You can't be mad at paying $10 a month and getting games the day they launch.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of games.
We're going to be here like all night just talking about Game Pass games.
Pretty much. That's what most of the show was about Game Pass. Every couple of minutes, they'd be like, here's some more Game Pass games. Mm-hmm. Like the next one, Crackdown 3 video, they showed it off. It looks good. The February date stands. It is releasing February 15th, obviously launching on Game Pass, although this isn't one of the 16 that they talked about. They also showed off a Wrecking Crew mode, which is a PvP 5-on-5 with fully destructible environments. So all the destructibility that they showed off previously is still in the game, which is pretty awesome. I'm excited for it.
I actually missed that trailer, so I need to go back and watch that.
It was pretty funny. Terry Crews was meeting the agent played by Terry Crews. So it was a Terry Crews versus Terry Crews face-off in Terry Crews' apartment.
That's a little ridiculous.
You know it's good when there's a line of a cardboard cutout surprise motherfucker. And then they announced that to celebrate Crackdown 3 getting an official firm release date, Crackdown 1 is free through the end of the month.
It is.
So bonus freebie.
Yay!
Hooray! After that, they showed off a video of Battlefield 5, or Battlefield V, whatever you want to call it.
No, it's 5.
Yeah, I know. But I've heard people call it Battlefield V.
Those are dumb people.
Yeah, I know. But I want to cater to the stupid, because we are stupid.
I mean, I'm just stupid by association.
No, you're with me on this one.
Well, fuck.
Next game announced coming to Game Pass, Hellblade, coming to Game Pass December 17th.
I'm so excited that more people are going to get to play Hellblade.
I think December 17th is the date that the retail version is launching as well, because they showed off the retail copy. Looks really nice, has a nice slipcover on it. It is obviously coming to PlayStation as well, but they don't have Game Pass on PlayStation, so suck a dick.
Hellblade is one of those games that just not an I know it did incredibly well and they sold a lot, but I still sit here and go, even with all those numbers, I just feel like not enough people have played Hellblade.
Yeah.
And if this gets into 5 more people's hands, then I'm happy.
It's gonna get into a lot of people's hands with Game Pass.
Good.
And it'll probably stay there for good, because now Hellblade is a Microsoft property.
Indeed.
That's so weird to think.
It was a good move, though.
Yeah.
It really was.
After that, though, they showed off a video and they had an interview for Kingdom Hearts 3. They just talked about, like, the Winnie the Pooh land. They showed off Tangled. They showed off Big Hero 6. Just a bunch of different properties that are going to be in the game they showed off. They had an interview talking about the game and the origins of Kingdom Hearts and everything else. A lot of people were hoping that they would announce the Kingdom Hearts original 2 games releasing on Xbox, but sadly, nothing there. Although they did sneak out a little surprise. They mentioned Final Fantasy and how they already announced Final Fantasy 7, 9, 10, 10, 2, and 12 are all coming to Xbox next year. Coming this week, by the time you hear this, it's already happened. Final Fantasy 13, 13, 2, and 13, 3. Lightning Returns, all playable via backward compatibility.
Oh, nice.
The entire 13 trilogy in one shot.
That's fantastic.
I was excited because the dude talking was obviously Japanese, and he's, you know, there's a translator there, and he's just going off saying a bunch of stuff I didn't understand, and then I heard 13, 13, 2, Lightning Returns. I'm like, oh, shit, they're coming to back compat. And yes, they are.
Very nice.
Another backer compatibility surprise, though, is Civilization Revolution is getting an X-enhanced version. So, there's one more enhanced game coming to the lineup.
I think I have that. It was Games for Gold, wasn't it?
I think so.
Nice.
And then more Game Pass additions. Yay!
Yay!
Ori and the Blind Forest is coming to Game Pass. They didn't announce a date, but it's coming.
The funny thing about that is that I kept hollering that I was waiting for Ori to either be Games with Gold or be Games Pass before I played it. And then the funny thing is a friend gifted it to me and she was like, you've waited long enough. And that was about 2 months ago. Here we are. So clearly I should have waited a little longer.
Oh, well. But Ori and the Blind Forest is hitting Game Pass. Ori and the Will of the Wisps is going to be hitting Game Pass on launch, whenever that is. And then a new game called Thief of Thieves from Robert Kirkman is hitting Game Pass today.
Was it today?
Yes.
Oh, see, now that's about the point where I joined in and started watching the show.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, I saw it, but I didn't see that it was today. But yep, I heard surprise. People go, oh, that looks so cool. And I'm like, okay, but, you know, I guess I'll be waiting a month or whatever until it comes out.
Well, good news.
I can go download it tonight.
Yeah. Launch direct to Game Pass. Surprise. I love when they do shit like that.
Yeah. That makes me happy.
After that, they talked about Sea of Thieves. They have a new competitive mode coming in 2019 called The Arena. It's going to be a free update. That looks interesting. They showed off a video for Jump Force, which is, again, releasing February 15th, because we need more shit releasing in February.
February is going to be crazy-ass busy.
It is, and it is not even funny at this point.
And it's also, like, the 1 month where I'm, like, super unavailable.
Shit.
Yeah.
Well, we'll figure that out next year.
Cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah. They showed off a video for State of Decay 2. The Zed Hunter is a free update coming on the 16th with new weapons, new mode. It's going to have crossbows and melee weapons like swords. So that's nifty.
Gonna have to go play some more State of Decay 2. Like, I definitely don't need to be losing hours to State of Decay 2. And that's exactly what the fuck I'm gonna end up doing.
Maybe you could convince me to fire it up.
That would be good. The funny thing is that I've been playing it. My save is entirely co-opt with Studa. And so that means his community is, like, completely neglected. All of his shit is in my community.
Nice.
Like, if he ever went to his own, I don't know what he would do except for just die immediately.
It's just tumbleweed.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Just corpses from all the people he left behind.
Even all of his dead have died in my game.
Nice. They showed off a video and had a quick interview for Just Cause 4 releasing December 4th. That looks insane. I can't wait for that. Mm-hmm. They talked about a charity drive that they're doing called Give with Xbox, where if you share a photo of you playing together with other people, share it on social media with the hashtag Give with Xbox. For every post, Xbox will donate $5 to one of four different charities, including Child's Play. And, God, I forget what the other charities were, but they're like...
Operation Supply Drop, Games Outreach, Child's Play, and Special Effect.
There you go.
Right off the top of my head, too. Listen to that.
Nice. $5 per post, up to $1 million across the four charities. So that is pretty awesome. Just for sharing a picture.
So take pictures of your ass playing Xbox with somebody else. If you don't have somebody else, set a cat beside of you, because God knows everybody listens to us has a cat.
I have a cat laying next to me right now.
Same. I got one on each side of me.
Oh, God, so do I. Piddles is behind me diagonally. So I've got Bean to my right and Piddles to my rear left.
Gabe's on my left and Raven is on my right.
The Piddle Bear.
Yeah.
Today.
More Game Pass announcements, because we need more of those. Yep. With Kingdom Two Crowns is going to be launching to Game Pass mid-December. Aftercharge is going to be launching in January. And Supermarket Shriek is going to be launching sometime in 2019.
That looked so ridiculously good, and I don't know why.
It did. A guy and a goat screaming to propel a shopping cart through an obstacle course.
I'm just on board for this. Like, if they tell me that you have to actually scream into your mic to make the scream work in the game, it will be so good.
Go, you goddamn goat, go!
This is going to be amazing. I don't even, that's speculation. I don't know if that's what you do, but I fucking hope so.
Oh, that would be incredible. Oh, after that, they had a video and interview for Devil May Cry 5, which looks fantastic. I can't wait for that one.
Yes, please.
After that was the Minecraft segment, which I had some personal drama going on there, so I missed like all of that. So did
cats
you catch
and pandas?
Cats and pandas.
Cats
yeah, that's
and
coming.
Pandas. And then there's another Minecraft game coming out, Minecraft Dungeons. And then Minecraft Villages is getting an update. What the differences between those are, I don't know.
Oh no, Victor's raiding with a party of three. I'm not that entertaining right now.
Three whole people while we're talking about Minecraft.
I'm not that entertaining. We're talking about news, video game news. Oh, shit. Let's see. What happens next after Minecraft? More Game Pass games were announced.
Oh, yeah. More.
With Mutant Year Zero, I was excited about this one, launching right to Game Pass next month in December. Pathologic 2, that looks like it's up your alley.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited for that one.
No date on that one, but it'll launch right to Game Pass, which is awesome. Secret Neighbor, which is a multiplayer-focused game in the Hello Neighbor universe. No date on that, but again, launching direct to Game Pass. And then another one called The Good Life.
Right.
So, a lot of stuff launching to Game Pass. A lot of new stuff. That is awesome.
Yeah, and this is, you gotta realize, this is in addition to what they will be adding monthly anyway.
Yeah.
Like, this is not just these 16 games are coming and this is it. No, they will still be adding, you know, they've been on a roll of what, around 5 to 8 new games a month?
Something like that.
So, I mean, this is just like a little bit of sprinkles on top of the ice cream. So.
I like sprinkles.
Same.
Yay. They showed a quick Shadow of the Tomb Raider video. I didn't really catch what that was for. Is it for DLC? Did you
DLC, catch that? Yeah. I missed the name of it, though. But it is DLC.
Yay, DLC.
I should have paid a little more attention to that, seeing as I have Tomb Raider.
That'll learn ya.
Yeah.
After that, they dove into mouse and keyboard support. Mouse and keyboard is going to be implemented into, I believe, 14 different games starting this Wednesday. So by the time you hear this show, there's going to be games with mouse and keyboard support. They're going to have a partnership with Razer. They're going to be releasing a brand new mouse and keyboard that works with Xbox dynamic lighting in supported titles. I didn't read the list yet, but two of them there are going to be supporting it. More details on the hardware is going to be announced at January at CES from Razer. And then they announced 14 games that are going to be supporting mouse and keyboard, including Bomber Crew.
I'm so glad. That came as a little tough to control with a controller, and so it will definitely be easier to play.
Yeah. Warface, which I haven't played that one yet.
I don't know anything about Warface.
Children of Morta, which is a new game coming out.
Yes.
Minion Master, another new game coming out. DayZ.
I was surprised by that one.
Were you?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because I kind of forgot that DayZ was even coming. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a game. Oh, shit, it's going to have keyboard and mouse support.
Warframe to go with Warface.
Yeah.
So more war.
So many frame face wars.
Oh, there's more war coming, too.
I know.
Strange Brigade is getting mouse and keyboard support.
Surprised by that one as well.
Were you?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know that it's overwhelmingly necessary. The game is really ported to controller very well.
I haven't played it yet.
I 1K. It's an easy 1K.
Is it?
Yeah.
You'll have to help me out with it, because I have the game. I just haven't fired it up yet.
It's very good.
That's what happens in my life. I get games and I don't get the chance to fire them up.
Same.
Mouse and keyboard support is coming to Deep Rock Galactic, which we had fun with that one.
We did, and I think that one will definitely benefit from keyboard and mouse.
Yeah. Warhammer Vermintide 2.
That one surprised me.
Again, why?
I don't know. I was just like, when I think of keyboard and mouse support for games, I think, like, okay, they're going to announce, like, Surviving Mars, Cities Skylines.
I was expecting those as well, really.
I was surprised there were so many shooters jumping on it so quickly.
True. Hopefully they find a way to keep them, you know, obviously Warhammer is a cooperative shooter game, so fucking let it be however you want to play that.
Yeah.
But there is a competitive shooter that was announced that I'm kind of worried about, but we'll get that in a few minutes.
Okay.
Moonlighter is getting mouse and keyboard support. That one, new game.
That one fucking needs it.
Wargroove, which more war.
The fuck is that?
another new game coming out. Vigor, which is on game preview right now. War okay. Thunder, which we need a fourth game with war in the title.
I feel like there's a theme here.
Just a little. X-Morph Defense. That was a pretty cool one to see.
And yeah.
That's one of the games that's going to have dynamic lighting. That and Warhammer were both announced to have dynamic lighting support.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I liked X-Morph Defense, and I usually don't like tower defense games.
Yeah, it's a really cool game. And then the final game that was announced to have mouse and keyboard support, this is the one I'm worried about, Fortnite.
Did you see the video after?
Parts of it. I wasn't paying attention too much because I was writing shit down.
What they're intending to do with Fortnite is they're actually going to break down the playlist. So if you're playing with keyboard and mouse, you will automatically be connected to people who are also playing keyboard and mouse.
Well, that is good. That is definitely a positive.
That keeps keyboard and mouse people from straight up fucking over controller people.
I'm sure they'll still find a way to get in.
Undeniably. Because I imagine you could probably set it up with your controller and then swap. Like, what's to stop you from hot swapping what control you're using?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'll have to see it, and I'm sure that they'll go the effort. And Fortnite is a pretty big force to be reckoned with at this point. And they're not going to do anything that's going to put any kind of danger on that sweet, sweet $300 million a month that they're making. So, and I can't say that I blame them, but they're not going to put themselves in jeopardy just for keyboard and mouse support.
Yeah.
So if any of them are going to be eager to figure out a way to handle it delicately, it's going to be them.
Yeah. I guess we'll see. We'll see how this works. It's going to be starting this week, so...
And I just
see how well it goes.
I don't care. Well, surviving Mars, I would like to see have it as well. But I just want the Sims 4. The Sims 4's controller mapping is just the worst shit in the world.
Well, hit up EA and be like, listen, you sons of bitches.
I don't know who I have to beg, but I will send you art and cookies and keychains. I'll even send you your own dick coloring book made just for you.
Sweet. Just
please, please let me have keyboard and mouse in The Sims 4.
Doc Havoc, then EA will just laugh at her as they hang up the phone.
Basically, but hey, look, it means a lot for me to just offer somebody my cock coloring pages.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that book. I'm excited for it.
I have to have it finished this week because the girls are out of school next week, and I obviously can't be working on it when they're home. So my goal is next Friday.
There you go. Chop, chop. You'll make up for Cocktober. I didn't get enough pictures.
Yeah, that's because I started holding them back. I wanted there to be surprises in the book.
Yeah. I only got like 3 of them. There were 30 days.
I know. They're over here in a stack. I just can't.
That's a lot of surprises being.
Can't
being
work on them to when be my seen. Kids are home.
Oh, man. Victor's a fan of War Thunder. So if you like mouse and keyboard support, you will be able to play with it in War Thunder. Mm-hmm. That's
he
good
didn't
news.
Like Fortnite, though.
Oh, man. Then they showed off a world premiere of the Metro Exodus Spartan Collector's Edition, which is releasing February 22nd. I got a press release on this one, and it includes a premium statue that is 10.5 inches made in resin. So it's not a chintzy plastic statue. And each statue is individually numbered, which is cool. Comes with an authentic Spartan Order dog tag, Artem's Memories collectible postcards, Spartan Order patches, two different patches come with it, all ships in a gigantic barrel-shaped package. Going to be $150 for this collector's edition, and it does not include the game.
Whoa.
Yeah, if you want to order it, they do have it bundled with the Aurora edition of the game, $234.99 with the game.
So you pre-ordered it, yeah?
No, I did not. I'm probably not going to be able to afford that one, especially with MAGFest happening in January.
Oh, we got to step it up on the biddies.
Yeah, donate biddies, and I will buy a $240 collector edition. And my wife will be thrilled about it, I'm sure. It is a cool-looking statue, though, and it is limited to 4,000 units. That is it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Pretty small number.
Yep, 4,000 worldwide. Yeah.
Ooh.
After that, they had an ID at Xbox segment with Chris Charla, who was on the show before. He should come back. That would be amazing. He talked about how there are over 1,000 games in the ID at Xbox program so far, with over 4 billion hours spent being played.
Like, 2 billion is just me.
Close. That's a lot of time spent playing video games, though. 4 billion hours.
It really is. That is an insane amount of time.
Yeah. And then they talked about a couple of games that are coming out through the ID program, including After Party, Sable, Ooblets, and Tunic. Are you excited for Tunic?
Good. But I have been stalking Ooblets for so long. Like, even before I knew they were going to be on Xbox, I was already on that shit. And I've been waiting for it. And so every time I hear somebody say something a little more about Ooblets, I'm just like, it's getting closer. It's a little closer.
Yeah, that one looks cool. I am super, super pumped for Tunic. I can't wait for that one. Dark Mika is really interested in After Party and Tunic.
Mm-hmm. Tunic is a one-guy show.
Yeah.
He's doing it, everything, the art and all the coding and everything, just solo.
It's and impressive it looks for incredible. A one-person job.
Yeah. We see that a lot in ID anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Stardew Valley.
True.
Stardew Valley was a one-man show, so, yeah.
Oh, man. What else? Winter of Arcade is going to be happening. We haven't seen any kind of arcade promotion in quite a while.
No.
So, they're going to have a Winter of Arcade promotion going on. More info is going to happen at the Game Awards in December. They tried getting some info out of Chris about what games are involved, but he couldn't talk about it, sadly.
Yep. Tight-lipped,
indeed. After that was Forza Horizon 4. The first expansion is going to be called Fortune Island. It is the largest expansion that they have ever made and will feature extreme weather once again, which I'm excited about.
It's fucking pretty.
Yeah, it was gorgeous looking. And then again, Forza Horizon 4 is fucking gorgeous the way it is.
It is, that's true.
And then Gymkhana vehicles are going to be coming to Forza Horizon 4 as well. The first two are out now. More are going to be coming over the coming months. Final Game Pass announcements. These are going to be coming later on this month, so no surprises here. These are games that are already out, but three cool games are coming to Game Pass, including Thomas Was Alone, MXGP3, and Agents of Mayhem.
Yeah, that's a pretty impressive lineup.
Yeah, good stuff. Agents of Mayhem deserved more love, although I really wish it was online.
Yeah. I think they finally made maps where you could see where all those the collectibles were, because they were in just awful places and you couldn't even find them on the map or know if you had got them all or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, apparently they patched all that, and that was like the biggest complaint that I heard people have about it.
Yeah. After that was a Black Friday deal segment. The Xbox One X is going to be down to $399 for Black Friday, so $100 off.
$399. That's a good price. The Xbox One S is on sale too.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of sales.
You can also get 6 months of Game Pass right now for $29.97.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
Ooh, I might have to jump on that.
And you can stack it.
That's even better. Fuck yeah, get a year for $60.
Yep.
It's holy shit.
That's half off. And that's actually, like, I'm not saying that and then going to be like, oh, well, by the time the show comes out, that's over with. Because it's not, because it's for 53 more days.
Nice. Yes. Very nice.
So you have and then some time.
If you don't have Game Pass now, you can get your first month for $1.
$1!
For new subscribers.
That's a hell of a deal. You get PUBG and
Forza Horizon 4,
Sea of Thieves, all for just $1.
Thief of Thieves.
So many thieves and wars.
Thieves and war. That is the running theme. The final segment that they had, Matt Booty came out and they talked about the Xbox family growing some more. Not one, mm-hmm. but two new studios are joining the Xbox family. The first one, Obsidian Entertainment, which everyone was speculating. They kind of knew that was happening. The developers of Fallout New Vegas, South Park, The Stick of Truth, Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2. They are now an official Microsoft studio.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big surprise, this one caught me off guard, In Exile Entertainment. They are the creators of the Wasteland series and Bard's Tale.
Right. Single-player RPG games seem to be their thing.
So holy shit, did that surprise me.
I hope that Microsoft doesn't go through, like, all this acquisition of these companies and, like, put them in... say, okay, everybody holler, they wanted single players. And then they release, like, this rash of, like, 50 single-player games, and everybody goes, where's the multiplayer? Because that's inevitably going to happen.
Oh, Victor just dropped 200 biddies. Thanks, Vic. You are awesome.
Look, see? You're well on your way to buying that collector's edition.
Yeah, we're getting close to that collector edition. We're $2 on the way there.
Think of that sweet, sweet unboxing video.
Man, I haven't done an unboxing video in a while.
Get it together, Joe.
I should have done one for Assassin's Creed, but that box was way too big for me to even manage on my desk. It would have just been like right up in the camera.
I fail to see the problem with this.
My camera is not wide enough to capture the whole thing. I'd be like standing back here like, all right. What's up, everyone? It's time for another unboxing video. Can anybody hear me back here? Oh, man. Good stuff. But yeah, In Exile and Obsidian Entertainment, two RPG-focused developers, are going to be making Xbox RPGs, which I am fucking thrilled about. They did say, because a lot of people were worried that, like, Wasteland 3... and Bard's Tale 4, which are slated to hit PlayStation, they're worried that they weren't going to happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And In Exile, at least, they confirmed that any commitments that they have through their Kickstarter for releasing games on platforms, they are going to meet those commitments.
Yeah.
So it looks like those games are still going to be releasing on PlayStation, which is good.
Yeah.
That's more money for Microsoft. But these are two companies that have been focusing on Kickstarters to publish and fund their games, and now they don't have to worry about that. They could just focus on making awesome RPGs without trying to drum up the cash.
It really seems, too, like Microsoft has been very hands-off as far as telling these studios that they've acquired, here you're going to make this or here you're going to make that. It seems like it's very much been, at least from like everyone they've acquired has made these videos about here's what it means for us, and like every one of them has said, oh, we're still going to be making what we love to make, we just have funding now.
Yeah.
And it really just seems like Microsoft is like, here's a stack of cash, give us a game. Yeah. And that's that,
and hopefully it stays that way, because we've seen companies get shuttered in the past, like where's Lionhead now? They've been shut down. You look at EA, who acquires companies and shuts them down, like Visceral. It sucks to see companies get shut down, and I hope it doesn't happen with any of these acquisitions, because they're all talented developers.
Yeah.
So let's hope that Microsoft stays true to their word. They're going to stay hands-off. It's just going to be funding. You do your thing. You give us games. That's how this is going to work, and let's hope it stays that way.
I think one of the most interesting things about the studios they've chosen to acquire too is that they all have their own like skill set. When you see a game from Undead Labs, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
When you see a game from Ninja Theory, you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and again, even with In Exile, like the first thing that I saw when I was going through their stuff was like, oh, they make single player RPGs. So it doesn't seem far-fetched to think that, oh, just because they're under Microsoft, that's going to change. They're not going to suddenly put out an FPS.
Yeah, we're not going to see like Bard's Tale kart racing or anything.
Right. So I think that the most interesting thing about those acquisitions is that they do all have their own little compartmentalized skill sets.
Look at you busting out big words.
And it feels like Microsoft is just going to say, do what you do best.
Yeah.
And you really can't go wrong like that. If Undead Labs, they just make really good zombie games. I know people shit on State of Decay and whatever, but realistically,
they could be glitchy. They could do with some bug testing, but
I mean, they were smaller and independent up until I mean, they were being published by Microsoft, but they didn't have that kind of backing because they weren't.
They were still independent at the time.
Yeah, they were still independent. So I mean, now that they've got the funding, they're gonna do what you're not gonna see Undead Labs make a Telltale game.
Yeah.
And so now they've got Microsoft funding. You're going to get what you already liked out of that studio. You can pretty much expect their next game is going to be another zombie game, but it's just going to be fleshed out and beefier, or it should be, because it's got Microsoft money behind it.
Then again, you never know, because look at Playground Games. They were focused on racing game, racing game, racing game, racing game. And now the big rumor is that they're going to be handling Fable or some kind of open world action RPG.
That is the rumor. We'll see, though. Again, that's rumor. And anything's possible.
Yeah.
What was it, the studio that made Vampyr? What'd they make before?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
It was so far off removed and so different. And now I don't even remember. But I mean, we see studios change, but I don't think that that's why Microsoft is buying these companies, to forcibly make them change what they're doing. I feel like it's more a case of, we like what you're doing. We want you to make more of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Here's some money to do that.
I could be wrong.
We'll see.
Again, I hope they stay hands off. I hope they stick to their word and they don't go in gutting studios and shutting them down, because that would suck.
Yeah, I don't think that there's going to be any kind of plans to do that, given the way that they've been because they've actively marketed these acquisitions as, you liked that company, so we bought them. You know,
you like now, what they made, and now they get to make it without worries about funding and whatever else they got to do. They could just focus on making the game.
If they were going to be shutting down and like reallocating people to different departments and stuff, they would be a little more hush hush about that shit.
True.
Who knows who they bought under the cover of night that we don't even know went poof, you know? It could happen. And we would be none the wiser because they didn't put a big banner up at XO18 for it.
Yeah. So what did you think of the XO18 event? I thought it was a really solid event. Lots of cool games were announced. Lots of cool games coming to Game Pass. Game Pass looks more and more valuable every single fucking week anymore.
I'm getting to a point where I wonder why anybody has an Xbox and doesn't have Game Pass. Like, what are you doing with your life?
True. Even people who have PCs and might not have Game Pass, because there's a lot of big games that are play anywhere.
It's true. Yeah.
Including Forza.
It's just such a deal to have it. And I'm always excited to hear more games being added to it. I know a lot of people are like saying, oh, PUBG's being put in Game Pass. That means this, that. No, that means that players like me who still enjoy PUBG are going to have some Christmas noobs to murder.
Good way to look at it.
I might finally get that duos win with Studa on my back.
Oh, you won't. No, it's not happening.
I might finally get that duos win with you on my back.
Yeah, there we go. We got 5th and Blackout because of me, and solely because of me.
Yeah.
Really, if you look at it.
I fucked around and did a dump and died.
Yeah, I saved your ass once.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I'm really
you died.
Bad for that. In Battle Royale games, I have shiny object syndrome, and so I run out and get dead. But then the terrible part is after I'm dead, I'm a really good spectator guide, and I like, oh, watch out, they're over there. I can hear them over here. And why didn't I do that shit when I was alive?
Because you were too busy looking at shiny things.
I really do. Suda fusses at me all the time. He's like, stop running straight ahead. He said, you run ahead. They see you. I try to catch up to you. They kill me. Stop trying to catch up to me then.
Oh, man. Anyway, that is it for the XO18 event. A little off topic, but Victor was asking, you brought up Telltale Games. He wanted to know our thoughts on the whole Telltale game situation. It's been a couple of weeks since everything went down, so it might be worth revisiting briefly. What did you think of the whole situation, and what do you think of it now?
So, no, it was still just so much fuckery. Like, I'm glad to see there was potential for Robert Kirkman's company to finish out The Walking Dead. I haven't heard anything else recently about it. I don't know if that's still going through, but that was the plan.
Yeah. Yeah, to my knowledge, that's what's happening. Skybound is going to finish the series.
So, and it's in good hands. I mean, it's Robert Kirkman's company. He's the one that made The Walking Dead in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So,
The situation itself, it's still such a bummer to see what happened. Just corporate mismanagement killed the studio. A lot of people out jobs. A lot of very promising projects are just gone and dead because of what happened. Like, we'll never see The Wolf Among Us Season 2. Yeah. I was super excited for the Stranger Things game. I was really looking forward to that. And it's a bummer that they're not going to happen because of corporate mismanagement.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. As far as everybody that's out of jobs and stuff goes, I hope that they've been picked up by other studios. I know a lot of other studios were being incredible and posting on, you know, social media accounts saying, hey, if you were part of Telltale and you don't have a job right now, we're hiring. Come check us out. Come talk to us. So a lot of other studios, you see this a lot, and it's one of the best aspects of the gaming community is that when one studio shuts down, everybody else opens their doors and goes, hey, we're cool with you. Come on. You know? Yeah. And so there's not really a lot of potential for good devs to be out of work long.
Yeah.
Cause there are other opportunities out there. But it's still a shame to see it happen. And I can imagine, you know, if you've been planning your life around, hey, I'm going to spend the next six months or so developing this game, and I know I'm going to be able to eat for 6 months, and then they come in to work one day and go, nah, no, you're not.
Surprise firing, bitches.
Yeah. Look, my husband has been on the receiving end of surprise firings, and I know what that's like, but you know, at least they have a marketable skill with a community that has open arms for it. So, you know, it's not all as tits up as it could be.
True.
Not to downplay it in any way, just that to be, I'm disgustingly optimistic as a person.
Yeah, that's gross.
So, you know, I tend not to look at it as like, oh my God, their lives are over. They lost their jobs. It's more of a, hey, look, everybody else wants to hire you.
Hooray. Yeah, it's, I don't know. We'll see what happens in the future. I still hope that Stranger Things gets a game adaptation somehow. I know, who was it? Devolver was interested in trying to do something. So we'll see if anything happens there. But Netflix still wants to make a game. So.
As it should. Stranger Things is a pretty awesome.
It is. I fucking love it.
Anyway, so I
missed the first season when it first came out, and everyone's saying, oh man, have you watched Stranger Things? I'm like, no, I haven't had a chance. And then they released it on Blu-ray and 4K at Target in a special packaging to look like VHS tapes. I said, if I get that, I'll watch it. And then we got it. And I marathoned that motherfucker. And then I marathoned season 2 and I fell in love with it. And I'm mad at myself for not watching it when it first came out.
I watch a lot of horror stuff early in the mornings when it's just me. And so I started watching Stranger Things one morning because my timeline and my mom's groups were like, oh my God, Stranger Things. And I'm just like, fuck, I don't have any idea what these dumb broads are talking about. Let me go look this up. And so I sat down and I started watching it. And like, the funny thing is that later in the morning when Dee woke up, normally he's like, oh, you're watching horror movies. I'm going to go back to bed. He can't do horror. He sat down and he's like, he got into it. And I was like, that's a good show.
Doc Havoc. Isn't Stranger Things basically the Wonder Years meets the X-Files? Yeah, kind of.
I can see that. Yeah.
That's a good comparison.
I don't remember watching The Wonder Years. I think my sister did, but I don't remember. But I remember watching The X-Files. I grew up on that shit.
Although there's no one as fine as Winnie. I had such a crush on Winnie growing up.
I remember that being a thing. Like, the internet has said everybody in this age group had a crush on Winnie. So I'm only familiar with that as far as what the internet has told me.
Yeah. Anyway, that is it for us right now. We are going to return you to your previously scheduled pre-recorded interviews that I open up talking about the beginning of the show. So I'm going to have to find a way to edit that. But do you have any final words before we send it back over to me and Tim Ekibis?
No. What did I say last week? And then you were like, you should have said that at the end. And I don't remember what it was now.
Oh, God, I don't remember either.
Fuck.
Starting things off, Tim Ekibis, how are you doing?
Hey, I got a question for you. Sorry, yeah. Not to derail things.
It's okay. Like, we just started the show. This is the part of the show where we just bullshit for a little.
Well, if this is going up Wednesday, we could talk about wrestling.
Well, that is tempting. Although that would be a very long episode.
Okay.
I am not prepared in the least. We'll save that for the next episode.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm not prepared at all for that yet.
All right.
What about Roman Reigns? Holy shit.
What about him?
We never talked about that stuff.
I think we talked about that.
Did we?
Like, the tail end of one of my reviews. Yeah.
Man, shit's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, Damn. It is crazy. Man. Yeah.
You wanted wrestling talk. I don't know where to go. I'm caught off guard.
Yeah, you're kicking off this episode with the preview of the next episode.
Yeah, next episode we're going to have wrestle talks.
Yeah, we're going to talk about wrestling, and it's going to go up like right before the shows. So
works for me.
Fun old sealed envelope predictions. I mean, I'm looking at this now, and like the card isn't even fucking set yet. Like the Survivor Series team. So we couldn't talk about it, anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't talk about
it. What do you think of the 5-on-5 tag team match? I don't know. I know two teams in total.
TBA, 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 TBA.
I have strong feelings for TBA on this one.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll talk about it on the next episode. I won't get into it. Anyways, the reason we came here.
Anyway, the reason we're here, Vidya Games. First game to talk about tonight is called My Hero One's Justice, developed by Biking Incorporated, published by Bandai Namco, released October 25th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $59.99. Fight for your justice in My Hero One's Justice. The popular manga and anime series clashes head-to-head and quirk-to-quirk in this 3D arena fighter. Tim, tell us about this one.
Oh, man. All right. So this is going to be maybe a bit of a unique review because I have not seen any of the show nor read any of the manga. I'm going to the library tomorrow. Perhaps I will pick up a book of the manga.
There you go.
Which I guess says something about this game that it got me kind of interested in the... in the show. So yeah, I am coming at you, the listener, from a perspective of having no attachment to the show, but only an attachment to video games. So,
which is what we talk about on the show. So
yeah, which is what we talk about on this show. But yeah, if you are a big, My Hero Academia fan and you want to know how it represents the show, this is not the review for you. I don't fucking know. Anyway, well, the show, for those who are in the same boat as me, seems to be something like everybody has superpowers. They call them quirks. And kids go to school to learn how to use them so they don't become evil. I don't know. It's superhero school. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sure, why not? That was kind of my guess, just really from the name of the show, really. It's not disappointing. Other than the fact that they call them quirks, and, like, there's characters who have, like, fucking headphone jacks that come out of their ears, and or they're frogs, or whatever. Headphone jack out of the ears girl really threw me for a loop. She also summons bass, though, so that's cool. Like, just speakers show up and shoot sound waves at people. I like her. I like that. I like her. Anyways, yeah, so that is the context of this fighting games 3D arena. So it's not on a 2D plane. You will end up kind of flying all over the place. Like, characters don't fly, but they can jump and combo in the air and dash around in the air. And you end up in moments when you're clashing in midair, and you might kick somebody against a wall or a ceiling, and then you land on that wall or ceiling, and suddenly, like, the perspective shifts to you fighting on that wall or ceiling. So things can get kind of crazy depending on the level. Like, yeah, there's some where you're just fighting on every surface and, like, knocking people into walls, and then bits of the wall fall down. It doesn't look great, but it's an effect. So yeah, you're flying all over the place. It's as just like a pure, so what you have for, your combat options, you can jump, you can, there's like a basic attack there, and then there's two quirk attacks, a block and a dash. And when you, like, press a direction with one of your attack buttons, you do a different attack, not unlike, like Smash Brothers, right? Where you'd push the stick to do a move in a particular direction. It's not, it is unlike that because you don't do it in a particular direction, but it does bring out a different move.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and then you can dash and you can block. Blocking, man, that's tough to do. It's just like, it feels like a lot of the characters' moves have a ton of recovery time after the animation, or like before the animation. Sometimes it's tough to gauge, but just by the nature of it being like a 3D arena fighter, it is tough to gauge why, like, sometimes you just miss, or you whiff to the side, or you're trying to, like, run around and come at somebody from an angle. So, like, just, like, the contact points end up being a little, like, literally hit or miss, where it's like I'll come in on somebody and they might, like, just sidestep, or I'll have a big attack and it looks like they might hit them, but it doesn't. And it's just kind of a side effect of them having to have this, like, really, or wanting to have this dynamic ability to, like, move around and move quickly and have that anime style, which doesn't necessarily make for a snappy fighting game. It's been a while, admittedly, since I've played one of these games, or a game of this style. Like, I did play some of the early Naruto games that came out over here, which were not terribly dissimilar, and that you still had, you know, the same kind of basic ideas of trying to be flourishy, but I feel like that was more grounded and tried to keep you a bit more on a level plane so that you'd be going at another character. But in this case, I don't know. I just felt like there was some disconnect in, like, when I was felt like I should be hitting people sometimes. But for the most part, like, it's fun. Like, you can smack people up in the air. You dash up after them, smack them some more, knock them into a wall. Their legs are sticking out of the wall and kicking, and then you can come up and do, you know, a big move on them. I was seeing, like, some frame rate droppage here and there. And this is the Switch version that I played this on, by the way. So, you know, I don't know. I've mostly played in handheld mode. I don't know if that holds true for the full console versions or not, but at least on the Switch version.
I played the full console version. I dabbled in it a bit. We were sent it on PS4 as well, so I checked it out on there. And I didn't run into any kind of big frame issues like that.
It was only, like, it was here and there. Like, I noticed it was weird. I noticed it a lot more when I, like, first started playing it. Like, it felt like it was, like, every match when it was loading in, like, it would get, like, a little bit framey. But then as I played more, either, I don't know if I just got used to it, but it felt far less. And it was pretty minor. If you want to talk about technical issues in the fucking Switch version, the load times on this thing are obscene. Well, I think they're pretty obscene. It's like, when you are loading a match, when you are loading a fight, it is 25 to 40 seconds to load in.
Ouch.
And man, that feels like a long time. And especially when I'm sitting down, you know, and playing this a lot on my lunch break, and I only have so much time to play the game, where it's like every time I'm loading up a fight, it's just like, oh my god, like seriously? It really bogs things down in some modes much more than others. So what they got for modes, you got a story mode. I guess the top two single player modes, there's a story mode and a mission mode. And the story mode is what I ended up kind of playing through the most of and having the most fun with, which, go figure, are going through the story, I presume, what follows the story of the show as this kid gets bestowed the powers of a one all might, the one character from the show that I recognize and know the name of. Sip of water. So he gets some superhero powers and needs to learn how to use them, so he's going to school. So, you know, you briefly are introduced to, like, all these other characters, or not introduced, and they're just suddenly there, and you're just like, okay, well, you probably know who these are if you watch the show, and if not, you're just like, okay, well, I get the gist, you know? So you're going through the story as he goes through that stuff. So it's set up as most, in some battles, you will have a choice of characters. In some, you'll be forced to play a particular character. In some, I think there's some that have special stipulations here and there, but I might be confusing that with the mission mode that I'll talk about. Either way, other than just following the main character, there are also side stories, like little side missions. There are also little what they call what-ifs, which are like little, I guess, I would presume to be variants on the main story of the show slash manga, which are there to play. It takes kind of like a comic book style presentation with the backgrounds and such. here's something annoying. So some of the chapters, they're just like little videos or like little cutscenes or whatever. They still have to load for like 25 to 40 seconds to like load up a quick cutscene. And because, you know, I don't understand Japanese, I'm just like reading the text and like popping through it. I would spend less time on the cutscene than I would on loading. And I'm just like, are you fucking serious right now? Really?
Yeah, I absolutely did not run into load times like that on console. Yeah.
Okay. I kind of thought that might be a Switch thing only. But man, did it bog down the experience. So yeah, the story, playing through the story was fun. I enjoyed that and like learning about the characters and going through the story. So that was fun. Then there is a mission mode, which mission modes are always great. I talked about one in Soul Calibur a couple weeks back. So yeah, basically the way this works is you'll have a mission set, like it'll have kind of like a map that you go through. You'll pick a team of three characters and then you'll go through it. And this is the case where like each stage is like, okay, these attacks do more damage, or your opponent is constantly regaining health, which is always the worst thing in the fucking world. you know, stuff like that, which is great, which is fun, which is awesome, which is something that I wish every fighting game had something of this style. The problem is, so in the story mode, if you fail a mission, if you lose a fight, you can reload right back in. In the mission mode, it takes you back to the map, and then you have to load fucking 25 to 40 seconds back into the goddamn match. And, like, I was really hyped for that mode, and that just, like, you know, I hit a mission, and I was having trouble, and I'm just like, okay, I'm just gonna go back to playing story mode, because I just can't deal with this loading in, like, constantly. It's such a pain in the ass. It sucks so bad. As you were playing through both the story and mission modes, you're like unlocking customizable stuff for your characters. You can, there's like a whole mode where you can kind of put these little bits and baubles on your characters. Not every piece goes on to every character, but it's like different pieces of headgear and stuff that goes around their neck and this, that, and the other thing. So there's some customization stuff there. Like you can't go crazy the way you can in Soul Calibur. It's just like, you know, just changing the effects on the character, the effects, not the effects, affects.
Teaching English during a review.
I was surprised that I was able to pretty quickly get into online matches. And those seemed to hold up pretty well. Even though I was playing like in handheld mode over the Wi-Fi, they were not super laggy and I was able to get into matches really quick. And I was like, man, that's cool. I honestly didn't expect that. So that's good and good for the Switch version. I don't know if it requires Nintendo Switch Online to play online.
I would imagine it does.
Maybe. Who knows? It's not always clear exactly, you know. But, yeah, that is pretty much the game. You got some good single-player content. At least the Switch version is bogged down by load times. The fighting system is okay. It's okay. For me, it's okay. Like, just, it didn't feel super good. I had a tough time, you know, sometimes with just, like, the speed of how moves were coming out and, like, the attack angles and a lot of times where it's, like, I felt like I was coming in and, like, I was going to get a hit, but then, like, the other character would have armor. There's, like, a lot of moves that seem to have, like, a couple hits of armor on them in this game. Like, too many, almost. That just made it kind of frustrating sometimes. But, like, when you get into a good groove and you're smacking people into the air and chasing after them and smacking them around and, like, putting off quirk moves, I guess. You're getting quirky. that can be fun, but it's, you know, not as good as the best fighting games out there these days.
I will say that it was really easy to feel like a badass playing the game with how easy it is to string combos together and string moves together and just like get these big combos, knocking people against walls and pile driving them into the ground just at the press of buttons. And it felt good to just feel like a badass when I'm not that great at fighting games.
Yeah. Just felt like kind of slow to me, I guess, in some cases, or just, maybe it was just, I don't know if it's the input or how the moves were coming out, but it didn't feel like snappy to me playing on the Switch.
Maybe you play a lot more fighting games than me, so.
I do. Yeah, there was a certain, like, snappiness and, like, just good feel that wasn't there for me, at least on the Switch version, and, like, again, we played different versions, and it already sounds like the console versions are vastly superior. Yeah.
So overall, it seems like you really enjoyed the game, but the load times are what's killing it for you.
Oh my god, it really, really bogged it down. Yeah,
if they could put out a patch to improve the load times, that might
fix. That would be a delight. That would be a delight. man, yeah. But yeah, in its current state, and this is again like this is someone who is not a huge fan of My Hero Academia, and this is the Switch version. I could not possibly recommend the Switch version of this game, you know, to somebody. Like, you shouldn't be playing this on Switch. Like, the load times are horrendous, and if you're not into the show, it's definitely not worth it. It sounds like the PS4 version is more competent, or the console version is more competent, technically. The big boy console. I don't know what the fuck to call them, PS4 and Xbox One. Switch is a goddamn console. Or is it a handheld? Who knows? It's both. It's Schrodinger's console. If you put it in the dock and put it in the box and then throw it down the stairs, is it a handheld or is it a console? Who knows? At the end. Yeah. But yeah, if you're curious, if you want to check out a 3D fighter, I would give the, without having played, I'd say, hey, maybe try the PS4 Xbox One versions first. Like, give those a rent. Check those out and see if that that tickles your fancy before anything else.
Fans of the show?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know if this would meet their standards. I don't try to guess what fandoms are about. Man, I mean, even if you're a fan of the show, don't get it on the Switch.
Well, unless they sort out the load times,
yeah, for absolute certainty.
Because it sounds like the games are pretty much on par, barring the load time issues that you ran into.
Yeah. It would be a deny on the Switch, and it would be a try from me on the PS4 Xbox One for non My Hero Academia people to see if they like it. But it does, you know, it's got good single player content, or a good amount of single player content. It seems like the fighting is fun enough. Even if it's not like top tier S rank fighting stuff. It's something you can shit around with, at the very least. But, I won't guess what, fans of the show would feel about this game.
on the bright side, you make it seem like it may have made you a fan of the show, or at least interested in becoming a fan of the show.
I'll check it out. Well, I'm like, I am finally finishing up Naruto, like reading the manga. I'm getting close to the end of that, so I know I'm gonna. I need something new to check out. And I'm a fucking Naruto hipster over here, you motherfuckers. Like, I started watching that goddamn anime when it was on episode like 45. Like, that's when I was getting my fan subs from Japan. Y'all weren't even into Naruto yet, kids. It wasn't even over here in English at all. There was no Shippuden. It was like hundreds of episodes before Shippuden showed up, man. I was there from the beginning watching that show and being like, hey, look at this show. It's like Harry Potter with ninjas. And then it was, you know, then it just went off the fucking rails. But, yeah, so, yeah, I'm looking. I've been, dude, check this out. If you go to the library, they just let you borrow shit for free. Did you know that?
Yeah, man, it's crazy.
Yeah, and they have, like, manga and graphic novels and stuff, and sometimes even video games.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ones we talk about on the show. It's nuts.
But, yeah, go visit your local library.
Yeah, and then you could try, maybe you could try My Hero One's Justice if they happen to have a copy. Seems unlikely. Seems that wouldn't be the one they'd have, but that's the idea.
You never know, man.
Or maybe go pick up a My Hero manga, and if you dig the manga, then maybe check out the game.
Sounds good. Tim, It is always a pleasure having you on. You make me laugh probably more than anyone else who comes on. do you have any final words before we move on?
Oh, man. I got nothing. I was like desperately trying to put together some kind of a pun from all might into like all right or I, but I just couldn't make it work. So that's your homework there, friends. Turn all might into a horrible pun, a wonderful pun.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Super Pixel Racers, developed by 21C Ducks, published by P-Cube and H2 Interactive, released October 31st on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99. Super Pixel Racers is a fast-paced arcade racer with top-down 2D pixel graphics and nostalgic 16-bit soundtrack. Race your way up the ranks in an expansive career mode with more than 200 races. Go head-to-head with racers from across the globe in online play with up to 8 players, or challenge your friends in 4-player split-screen multiplayer. Checking this one out, who clearly didn't do the local multiplayer because he has no friends, Jacob Garner.
Well, that was fucking rude. What the hell? What the hell kind of introduction is that, man?
A good one.
Fine, I'm leaving.
I had to take an early shot. It was there waiting to be taken. It's okay, I don't have friends either.
Yeah, but like, you could have gotten your wife to play or something, you know.
I tried getting the cats to play, but they were busy. They were busy licking themselves.
Yeah, I'd rather do that than, you know, play with you. So yeah,
exactly. So, Super Pixel Racers, how is it?
Honestly, it looks really nice. I like the sound of it. It's a retro racer, like top-down, like Micro Machines back in the day. And more recently, we reviewed Wheel Spin Frenzy. And it's one of those, and it, you know, it's this usual, you go around the track, and you can race up against other people. And there's a career mode to it. There's a free mode, which has all sorts of like neat, things that you can change on the track. Like, how difficult is it going to be? How many people are you racing against? What the weather's going to be? Along with all the different various tracks, which, you know, get progressively more insane as you go, you know, as you get farther along. It starts off with like, you know, just like a simple loop, and then you've got, did you see the China one? That thing was a beast. It's like the very last one. That is insane.
Yeah, the tracks get crazy in this game.
Yeah, which is something I really enjoyed. Like, I really liked how it wasn't just like the simple like loop with slight variations, like what we saw with Wheel Spin Frenzy.
Yeah.
Like this one, like they definitely took their time making the tracks and, you know, making each one very different, or at least progressively different from the past ones. I think I covered all the basics on that. My gripe with it though, is the controls. They never felt right, and the game offers you two different controls. One of them is a simple, like, you know, whatever direction you're aiming it in, that's how your car is going to go. So if you're going, so if you point your stick up, the car is going to go up. If you point it left, it's going to go left, but, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's the retro controls, which were considered to be the hard ones.
Which is what I played with, because it was just more natural for me.
Yeah, I did both. And honestly, I thought I was going to do fine with the retro ones. But neither set of controls ever actually felt right for me. And I ended up spending most of them, like, I mean, you know, it's a standard joke here on SML that, you know, Jacob just sucks at games all the time. But,
confirmed.
But, like, I have played enough of these retro, you know, top-down racer games. Like, I know how they play, I know how they control and all this kind of stuff. And it's just, like, both sets of controls, it always felt like, it would split second take me in a direction I wasn't aiming for. Or then it would just, or a lot of the times with the quote-unquote easy one, it would just take me off in a direction I, like, you know, I'm pointing right and it's shooting me up, like, literally up. And it's just, the controls just always felt screwy, and I always, I struggled to, you know, finish laps without having my car explode in a million pieces. So, Joe, do you have anything that you want to comment on that?
I feel the same way. We talked about this briefly before we started recording. I was the one who said it felt like every time I would press a direction, it felt like for a split second it would go the opposite direction, and then it would go the direction I was pressing. So if I'm lightly pressing to the right to ease around a turn, it would start taking me left instead. And
yeah,
it was very hard. Like, I was able to sort of get used to it and get through some of the races, but it was brutal trying to get through. I don't know if this is a glitch that was overlooked or if other people aren't experiencing it and it's isolated. I don't know what it is, but it is enough to drive you crazy when you're trying to go in one direction and it just so very briefly throws you the wrong way and it completely throws off what you're trying to do.
Yeah, because one of the things that I thought, I mean, yeah, as you were saying, it might be isolated, because I was looking online seeing what other people had to say about the game. And for the PS4 version, like, it's got pretty good, it's like a pretty decent reviews, and nobody's saying the same stuff that we are.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it's, you know,
maybe it's an Xbox thing.
Right. That's what I was about to say. So I don't know. I mean, it looks pretty. It seems really neat.
There's a shitload of content in the game.
Yeah. Like, they definitely, you know, they put their blood, sweat, and tears into this game. But the controls are just really wonky. I don't know what exactly is up with it.
Yeah, I feel the same. For $15, what do you think of it?
For $15, I was I didn't pay $15 for it because this was a review copy. But I mean, like, $15 to struggle through each lap. I don't know about that. I mean, this is a game I'd definitely be, you know, if the developers, you know, release patches and work on the controls, by all means, I'll check the game out again. But I didn't have fun with it,
yeah,
which is a shame because, you know, they definitely did a lot of work for this game, but I just didn't have fun.
Yeah, I unfortunately agree with this one. As it stands with the control issues the way that they are, it's a tough one to recommend. The game has everything right except for the controls, which is a bummer because there's a lot of content in the game, a lot of modes in the game, a lot of courses in the game. It looks great. It sounds great. It just controls just screwy enough that it's hard to recommend it. If they release a patch to address the control issues, I am more than happy to give this a second look because it, you know, it has the makings to be a fantastic game. But whatever the control issue is, it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Oh, man. Well, they can't all be perfect. Hopefully this one gets fixed and updated because, again, it has a lot of promise.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, like, I could easily see this being, like a long-lasting series. But, yeah, it's just the controls need to get fixed on it. So.
Oh, man. Oh, well. Well, Jacob, always good having you on, chatting about this kind of stuff. Do you have any final thoughts?
Nah.
Thought you were going to tell me, like, burn in hell or something.
Oh, nah. I'm just okay. I'll let you survive this week. I got a juice box.
All right, moving on. Pernell Vaughn's here. Pernell, how are you doing?
Cold.
I swear, it's either you're too hot or you're too cold. Is there ever a time where you're good?
No. My porridge ain't right. My pillows aren't right. Nothing right. It's just tepid cold. It's cold. I just love how I said tepid cold. That doesn't even go together properly.
Not at all.
But no, it doesn't. Though, I did get hit by the Nintendo Flim Flam, but I barely dodged it. They released Super Mario Party last month, and I bought that because I'm all like, oh, yeah, I love Nintendo games, and I love Mario Party. I'll get on that. And then, bastards come up with their Joy-Con Nintendo Mario Party bundle, which is a great deal, except they brought out a month after launch.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's like a slap in the face. If I had opened my copy of Mario Party, because you know how I am, I was like, I got to get somebody over to play it, and I ended up playing someone else's copy before mine. If I had opened mine, I'd have been livid, because that I need Joy-Cons, and Nintendo knows that players need Joy-Cons to play that damn game. That bundle should have been a day one opportunity, and it actually kind of feels lame, but I lucked out. I went to Best Buy. I said, look here, guys, I'm returning this game. You know why I'm returning it. They didn't know why I was returning it, because they ain't into the games like that. But I was like, look, I'm getting the Mario Party bundle, so I don't need this lame or weaker edition. To put it in perspective, since my Gamers Club hasn't expired yet, even if they didn't take the game back, I would have made out better by buying the game twice and then reselling the original.
Wow.
Because they were selling the two Joy-Cons with Mario Party for $100.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you know, Joy-Cons alone are 80.
Yeah, they are pretty goddamn expensive.
Yeah, so it's like, for me to ignore that bundle, not to mention the fact that this is the last chance I'm going to get to use Gamers Club on a game controller. I'm doing that twice this season with that and Smash Brothers.
Ooh, it's Gamer Club works on it?
Because it's bundled with a game.
Oh, shit.
That's what I mean. I got the bundle for $80, which damn. Is the price. Joy-Con, which means I got Mario Party for free. So I'm like, why the hell would I not do this? And when I tried to return it, I was just outside the return policy because, you know, Best Buy's return policy is short as shit, which, don't get me wrong, I guess for the normal person, it's decent. It's 15 to 30 days. But for people like me who will hold a damn game for dear life waiting for a deal to kick off if need be, it's not long enough. Get down that Target game. But anyway, the lady did me a massage. She's like, well, look, I don't know if this isn't going to be taken or not, so you might be better off trying to do an exchange on the bat instead of trying to get credit for it. So I exchanged it for two games instead that added up to the same cost, and then you exchange that. So I'm either going to keep those two games or take those games back to something else. I haven't decided yet, because one of them is a game I actually reviewed already, but I was like, then I can get a physical copy of it for the collection.
Which one? And then the
other, Etrian Odyssey 5.
Mm.
And then the other one was a game that one of the other people on the show reviewed. Which is Fallen Legion, that nice. Game that's like the left and right kind of like Valkyrie profile looking battle system.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I feel like if I keep them, it won't be all bad, because I was curious about Fallen Legion, and getting the bundle isn't a bad thing on the Switch. And then, of course, Etrian Odyssey, I didn't need it because I already have a digital, but my brain was like, I have 1 through 4 in both Untolds and Shrink. Well, not in Shrink, but in their boxes. I'd feel weird if 5 just was the missing link because I had it digitally. So I was like, if I can get this game for like 20 or sub 20, maybe I'll just get it for the sake of having it on the shelf. And it was discounted by $10 plus Gamers Club. So I was like, okay, 22? Yeah, I'll bite.
That's not bad at all.
Nah, because it's a great game too. It's just, I was like, I already have it. But just also in its own right, why, like, admittedly, it was a review copy, so I'm thankful for it. But if someone was like, I'm just going to buy my Etrian as digital, like, don't you dare. I can't resell that Etrian to a friend who might want it. That game is locked onto my system now, and I've been playing it. But it's like, can't sell it. I can't be like, well, now I got my physical, so I'll sell the digital to somebody who prefers digital copies. Nope. Locked on me.
Yep. What are you going to do?
Enjoy what I got and smile about it, because Etrian Odyssey is good enough that it's worth the buy on the own.
Very true. But speaking of review copies, should we dive into the two games you got to talk about?
I think that sounds like a smooth and pleasant idea.
All right. First game that you're here to talk about is called Steel Rats, developed and published by Tate Multimedia, released November 7th on PS4 and Steam for $19.99, also coming to Xbox One as well. Wreck and ride in a visceral and groundbreaking evolution of the 2.5D action arcade genre, fusing destructive octane-fueled motorbike combat and death-defying stunt gameplay. Set in a visually styled retro future world, switch between four unique characters as you wreak havoc. Pernell, what is Steel Rats?
Steel Rats is a surprise. So I never heard of this damn game. Again, I think this happens a fair bit on the show, which I actually like. I had never heard of this game until you said, you want to view this game called Steel Rats or whatever? I'm like, yeah, I suppose. Why the hell not? Nothing got going to hurt. And I started playing it, and I kind of got addicted to it. It's a very unique type of game, and a type of game that I didn't even know I wanted, but I like this game a lot. So what's going on is, plot-wise, I barely even care. You're a gang of kids or adults or a combination of the two called the Street Rats. And it's sort of like a post-apocalyptic environment where, like, well, we won't call it post-apocalyptic, it's more like a grungy atmosphere where aliens or robotic aliens or whatever decided to invade the world. And your guys are riding motorcycles to stop them. Game concept that I didn't even know was even existent, but it works. So the way the game itself works is that it's a 2.5D, like you said. You use the left trigger to brake, the right trigger to accelerate. So, and then like other things are like just like driving the right accelerates, left brakes. All right. If you hit circle, your bike turns. So that's how you turn the bike. And if you're actually moving at the same time, you'll kind of do like a spin backwards and like immediately change direction, which means it makes it perfect for like doing like U-turns and going back and forth up hills and stuff. Up and down lets you shift into the lane. So it's not like Guardian Heroes style shifting where it's immediate, like you just go lane one to lane two. It is actually moving up and down across the area that you can drive your bike in. And that's how you maneuver. But the added component is two things. One, sometimes movement involves getting a little bit vertical, whether it be by jumping over obstacles by making your bike leap with triangle, or sometimes you can make the bike grip onto certain areas of the map to kind of ride up and up walls and over ceilings, which is honestly pretty freaking awesome. Also, while you're in the air, you can do like, I won't call them air tricks because that's not what it is, but you can like kind of make the bike do flips sometimes, which will factor into certain bonuses, which I'll get into in a minute. And then the last component about the gameplay is that every once in a while, well, not once in a while, a lot of the time, you'll get into situations where you have to deal with combat. So robots will start showing up on the map of different varieties. Sometimes there'll be like giant floating mines that will drop down and try to crush you. Sometimes you'll deal with just like little sentry robots that shoot bullets at you. And some that are just kind of there being assholes in your face, wondering, wishing that you did just get out of the way. And the way you deal with all of these opponents is by attacking them, and they give you a variety of different ways to do it. Just use referring to the guys you start the game with. If you hold down the X button, your bike, like the front of your bike, I guess essentially develops like fiery treads. And as when you have those out, you can drive through certain obstacles. Like you can, like, say for example, a parked car in the street, your bike will tear through the car and you'll keep going. If it's an enemy, your bike will kind of dig into them and then eventually tear through the enemy and you can keep going. And it's a pretty cool way to deal with some of the smaller fry, where it's like all you gotta do is crash into them while you get that out and you'll just kill them.
Nice.
Of course, larger enemies, that's, it'll do damage, but you'll be just kind of driving into them doing damage while they're shooting at you and stuff. So not the most effective way to kill them. But if you find ammo on the map, you can hit L1 to fire bullets. And you don't have to necessarily aim the gun, which is a good thing, because trust me, if you had to aim this, you'd kill yourself. It just, if you're facing the target and you're kind of driving in their general direction or facing them, you'll fire bullets at the target, which is pretty conducive for the way the gameplay flows. And lastly, but not so lastly, Your character has special abilities that you'll unlock as you play through the game. The starting character, for example, finds a sentry robot that flies around and follows him. And if he hits the square button, it'll fire lasers, like a laser out at a nearby target. So as you play through the game, you'll find the different side characters in addition to the main character. And they all have different sub-weapons, different charge attacks, which is when you hold down R1 lets you come to like a charge dash. And each character has a different variant of that. And just multiple different types of attacks. So let me think. The main character I mentioned earlier, one of his main attacks is he can drop mines behind him. It's his like dash attack. There's another character that you learn find later in the game, and he can like kind of launch harpoons at guys that can lock onto enemies, and you can kind of like just like do like spin attacks into them once you pull them close. So he's good for drawing enemies closer and then just smash them with close range spin attacks and melees. As you play through each level, you will acquire junk. Junk can be acquired by breaking obstacles on the maps, killing enemies, and on each level there's also like sub goals, like maybe finish the level in a certain amount of time or do a certain number of wheelies for a certain amount of time and stuff like that. And they're not required to do those side tasks, but again, if you do them, you'll get additional junk, which is then used to purchase upgrades for the bike. Things that will either unlock new abilities or modify currently existing abilities, and eventually also unlocking things like an automatic, like an ultimate attack move or something like that for each character. Gameplay is ridiculously fun and fluid. It's a game where I didn't know if I was going to like it because, again, the idea of like bike combat seems like it would be frustrating in a lot of ways because you're constantly moving. It's like it has a similar, you know, conflicting thought process that say, remember Sunset Overdrive?
Mm-hmm.
How similar idea where it's like there's combat, but it's frenetic, momentum-based combat. So you're always moving and you're dealing with enemies while you're on the move.
Yeah.
I was worried that this game, as much as I love Sunset Overdrive, that does bug me sometimes when I'm trying to play efficiently in both facets of the way the game works. And I was worried that would be a similar thing here. But combat has never been a problem with me in this game. I have enjoyed it every step of the way.
Nice.
I have a great time dealing with the combat in this game. And once you start getting into the flow of everything, flying through the stages becomes a lot of fun, especially if you're trying to get if some of the levels has that actual time trial challenge, where it's like, beat this level in 4 minutes, it becomes fun to ask, like, I can do this. And you're just like dashing through the stage, trying to do everything as fast as you possibly can. And it's a quality product. I have been enjoying it. There has been one unfortunate problem I've had with it, which is it's more of a gripe than a gameplay concern.
Let's hear it.
So I mentioned earlier that you acquire junk, and junk is used to buy upgrades and, I guess also worth mentioning, skins, which are like make your character look a little different and make your bike look a little different. Each character has different outfits and different paint jobs for their bikes. They're not mix and match. It's just you can get the one outfit and then you can get another paint job for the bike. You can just do that, but not like mixing and matching between the bikers or anything. So they all cost a certain amount of junk. But junk is really easy to get. Like, heaven forbid you try to go back and do some of those challenges, maybe take one or two attempts at doing it, and you'll end up with more money than you'll probably know what to do with by that point alone. So you'll be getting money, at least if you play like me anyway, you'll be getting money faster than you unlock the different upgrades to be purchased. So every time a new upgrade became available to purchase, I've already had the money to buy it. There was never a concern about not having enough cash. So again, it doesn't make the game worse. It just makes the sub goals less meaningful to acquire because I feel like I was already in the process of having enough money to do things without even fishing to try to get them all.
Yeah.
But I like getting the upgrades and I like making the different characters play a little bit differently. And since you can switch between the characters on the fly as you play and they don't share health bars, it's almost incentivizing to even use all the characters. I mean, you likely probably could just stick with a few guys that you like, but they give you decent incentive to say, look, these guys are technically your lives in the game. So you're going to want to switch between them, maybe use like how Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1 used to be, where it was like, okay, use Raphael and Michelangelo for the crappy sections. And then when you want to get down and dirty, you break out Leonardo and Donatello, you know. That could be how somebody feels about this game. Use James when you just want to tear through some stuff and you don't care about damage. But when you want to get technical and get some stuff done, you bust out that Toshi action and you make it happen. You know, that same mantra. And it's just a genuine joy. And it's even better because, again, I never heard of this game until you offered it to me. But I like it. I like it a lot.
Nice. Well, minor gripe aside, $20. What do you think of it?
I think it's a purchase, man. I think it's a solid purchase. It's a fun time. And even if you end up finding yourself not caring about the plot, which, don't get me wrong, even though I was like, I don't care about the plot so much, I was following the story elements, and every time I was like, oh, I'm curious to see what's going to happen next. I got to find their new friend or whatever. And I'm looking forward to seeing them, like, you know, you look forward to seeing, okay, are they going to reveal the robot, why the robots are here? Do they ever reveal that? Do you reveal if Toshi and Lisa are going to become buddies or more? Does James ever decide to mow his beard? You know, all that kind of stuff. It makes you interested to see how it plays out. But even if you don't care about it, it's not a make or break concept of the game, because the gameplay is fun regardless of whether you care about the premise or not.
Nice. Sounds awesome.
It is awesome. And I like the music too.
Well, hopefully when it comes out on Xbox, I'll be able to pick it up and give it a go, because it sounds really cool.
I think you will like it.
Awesome. Well, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Deru, The Art of Cooperation, developed and published by Inkkit, released November 7th on Switch and Steam for $14.99. Deru, The Art of Cooperation is a puzzle game that mixes eye-catching abstract art with mind-bending puzzles to a unique gaming experience. Pernell, what is Deru?
Deru is an oddity, too. So, I like Deru, but it's a wonder of how much someone else might like Deru, and that depends heavily on what kind of games you get down with. So, the idea behind this game is every level is kind of a sort of, I want to say, abstract puzzle, maybe? In that, as you enter the level, the background can be a different color, and there are, like, usually blades of ink flying around the screen, or, like, bits of ink, white ink and black ink. The white ink can be blocked by the black Pip character, and the black ink can be blocked by the white Pip character. In each level, there is a triangle that is the shape of the player-manipulated pieces, one black and one white. And the object of each state is to maneuver each color to its respective docking station to end the stage. And the puzzles typically stem around being able to visualize what, like, a pattern within an atmosphere. This is going to be a weird thing to describe verbally. So, to give you an example, I actually booted this up to look at one stage just in general. So, one level is just three lines, two white and one black. The black is going horizontally upwards to the left, and the white is kind of crossing over to the right and then flowing downward in the middle. So you have to look at this and determine, okay, based on where the white starts, where the black starts, and where they have to ultimately end up, what is the best way to start blocking and maneuvering the ink around? And I feel like, at least for this stage, if I was playing with another person, this would be pretty, it would be a fair bit easier to do, because it's like, okay, you, just block the damn ink, and then I'll move this guy. But playing it solo, which I won't lie, I've developed a weird affinity to playing these games alone and controlling both Pips. This happened a lot over the last month and a half. But doing it solo, you are
your own co-op partner.
You damn right. I'm going to max that beast out too. but maneuvering individually, both of them by yourself, can be a real mind breaker. In a sense, like, even some of the simplest puzzles become challenging because, quite frankly, your brain just doesn't typically do that kind of thing with video games. You're usually manipulating one avatar or one thing at a time, not so much two things together. But it's an enjoyable little thing to consider and trying to figure out how to manipulate and solve the different, you know, concepts of how the stuff gets around. And I was enjoying that as I played it. However, from what I gather, the game is pretty much that. There's like different visual variations of the concept. Like, there might be a level where ink is like cascading and you might have to like maneuver like simultaneously to keep the water, the liquid off of the other one, simply because the flow is all across the stage. It may not just be splades of ink. It's just, here's an entire cascade of ink. Sometimes you might have to stop the flow of ink in order to break a structure, which then releases weird, colorful, pippy things, which, as corny as this may sound, because I'm supposed to be reviewing the game, I have yet to figure out what those things are for. I just see them, I crash into them, and eventually the exit shows itself. It's like, get out here, dude. You earned a win. Like, what did I do? Don't ask questions. Just walk out the door. All right, fine by me. That's what art is, because this game is definitely artistic and is a nice visual. It provides a nice visual premise, because, again, like I say, it's just, it's mostly like various colored backgrounds. Sometimes it'll be patterns and stuff in the background. And then you have the ink spraying across that. And then you're manipulating the ink with the little triangular pip characters that you control. And it looks nice. Like, it looks really nice. You wouldn't expect it to, but it does. And I have enjoyed what I've played. It's just a matter of, it's one of those, like, it has to be something that you really like. Like, you have to really be in this content. Like, if I was reviewing this and listening to my own review, like, if I was two people, this is a really bizarre concept. If I was two different people and I was reviewing this game for myself, I'd want it. Because I like the idea of controlling two things. I like the idea of having a friend over to control one versus the other for the more difficult puzzles. Because they do get difficult to the point where I was like, I'm like, you know, I'm supposed to be reviewing this, but I suck. I can't get past this world with my one feeble brain. But that's when
the game is called The Art of Cooperation. So you would expect there to be that heavy two-player element there.
That is very true. And I think that is a major component to where it would work out, too. Like, I think co-op is a very important thing, and I like the idea of this because it's worth mentioning that even though I said some of the puzzles would be a lot easier to do if you had another person to manipulate in the other piece, I think it also stands to reason that telling the other, unless the other player just kind of picks up, which I ain't gonna lie, every time I play these kinds of games with friends, they're not usually the type to pick up on solutions as fast as I do. So sometimes you'll be like having to describe, okay, do this, stand in the Google goggle, you know, short of just taking the controller away from them and doing it yourself, trying to depict to them in your mind, I need you to do this, block that stream, what stream, that stream, which stream, the one
you dumb asshole, just fucking do the thing.
Block the one I just died on. Do that. You know, like, I think there's a very, there's something worth saying to having to describe to the other player what you need them to do for you when that player could theoretically have 2 to 3 options available to them on the screen as far as like what inkjet to stop or whether or not you want to shoot for the, make a mad dash to the next potential stopping point or do you want to take it slow and easy and get to the next stopping point. You know, there's like, various ways of describing your experience and adventure to get to the end. And it's amazing that I've talked this much about this game because it really is visually stimulating black and white art, black and white ink blocking badness.
Well, then overall $15 on it. What do you think of it?
I think it's a, I want to go with deny if you don't have a co-op partner and you can't handle 2-on-1 control. Try it if you can play it by yourself. And, you know, because basically you might not have that second player, but buy it if you can do it with two players. It's an easy buy with two people.
So you're just covering the entire spectrum of our ratings.
The whole damn spectrum for one game. But I think it's a valid cover, you know? If you don't have access to a co-op partner and you're not all that great with controlling two things at once, don't even chance it. But if you do have the potential for a second player, then it's easily a try. But if you know you have a second player, this is a no-brainer buy. It's a good buy.
Nice. Seems like it's perfect for the Switch, so it's good that it's on there.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing, I've come to really appreciate about how the Switch rolls is that, and I got a friend, I'm going to, next time I see him, I'm going to try to convince him, because I finally decided it's worth trying. He does not own a Switch, but I do, and I'm at his house a lot. I'm like, look, just go to the store and buy a dock and hook it up to your TV. I can come over, I'll dock the Switch, and we're playing my console, and you spent $30.
There you go.
And games like this would be perfect for it. We'll just take off the nunchucks. Or the nunchucks. Yeah, the nunchucks. The various Nintendo weaponry. No, we'll take off the Joy-Cons, and we'll just play the game. It's just, it's a perfect fit for that kind of thing.
Why take off the Joy-Con when you have two spare ones from your Mario Party bundle?
Because you got to charge those bad boys. That's the one detriment to this system, I think, is that, or for the Switch, is that, you know, unless you go out and buy a separate charge device, you have to pretty much charge two Joy-Cons, take them off the system, put them to the side, and then put two more Joy-Cons on and charge them. And if you have a four-player game session and you're done for the day, you got to charge two Joy-Cons, take them off, charge two Joy-Cons, and do it again. Whereas I'd rather just be able to dock all four Joy-Cons on the dock.
Well, that's what the charging stations are for, like you said.
They cost extra, and I'm cheap.
Everything costs extra.
Put them on discount, damn it!
Oh, man. Purnell, it is always good having you on, chatting about the games. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
I was going to say, I was just close to saying, check out my charity stream, but I already did it. So,
so fuck your charity stream.
It's not that bad. It was a good time. But I also just random recommendation. I didn't review it on here, but so, speaking of like games that don't get any press that should totally get concept, look into Joggernauts. It's a good time. It's a good freaking time.
Yeah, Chris reviewed that a couple of episodes ago. So
it is good. Hope he liked it.
He did.
I liked it. He better have. I'd have screamed at Chris. I would have screamed at that man. But I'm glad to hear that he liked it too. It's good, man.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Rage in Peace, developed by Rolling Glory Jam, published by Togue Productions and another indie, released November 8th on Switch and Steam for $12.99. Rage in Peace is a story-driven action-adventure with elements of surprise and memorization. Unravel the last day of Timmy's life as he races against time to get back home to fulfill his sole dream of dying peacefully in his pajamas, in the warmth of home, in peace, and with no drama. Checking this one out. Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Feeling a little bit of Timmy's dream here.
You have the dream to die in your pajamas at home?
Well, just the no drama thing, really.
Yeah, no drama is always good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, I'm doing good. Been playing some video games.
Which is always good.
Which is always good.
I wonder if Timmy played video games.
Always and forever. Apparently, yeah, because when the concept of a double jump is introduced right at the beginning of the game, he like questions it. He's like, what, like in video games? So he's familiar enough with the concept that he gets that there's a thing such as double jump.
So this sounds like a meta game.
Oh, a little bit. It's just got jokes. They got jokes. Okay. So might as well get into it. Rage in Peace. Yeah. So it is the story of, well, basically, it's narrated by Death, the Grim Reaper, who is always a great character in literature. I'm a Terry Pratchett fan, so I do love when Death is actually characterized and has a real role in the proceedings. And yeah, so it's basically narrated by Death. He tells the story of Timmy, forget his last name, but his last name's not important. It's like Dunahill or something like that. Anyways. And yeah, Timmy is, yeah, I think it gives his date of birth and it's set 27 years before his date of death, which is interesting. And that's set to the internal clock of the Switch. So like when I played it today, his death was set at November 12th, which, you know, it's, the 12th, which is today.
Or it was 2 days ago by the time this.
Yeah, it was 2 days ago by the time this comes out. That's what I was trying to parse that. I was like, how do I say it will have been the 12th? I don't know. But that's the cool thing, I think, is that, you know, this is it's very much driven home at the very beginning that Timmy's fate is set. He is going to die. And on the date that whenever you're playing the game, it will adjust the date, which is kind of cool. And yeah, so Timmy is an unassuming, seemingly emotionless, just sort of laid back guy. Doesn't especially like, you know, he doesn't challenge Death. He doesn't say, you know, oh, why me? He's just like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. He's like, well, that's unfortunate because I did have one dream and, you know, that piques Death's interest. And, we come to find out that his dream is just that he wants to die alone in comfort in his home. And Death, I think Death felt a little something there. He was like, well, all we have here is the how and, you know, roughly when, but we don't know when on this day you're going to die. We only just know how, and it's through decapitation.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So he says, your head's definitely going to get chopped off today, but if you can make it home and get into your pajamas and go to bed, then, fate will allow you your dream. So the goal of the game is to run from your job to your home, across a 15-hour, like, you know, end of the day. I can't do the math and figure out when. What time of day that is, seemingly just sometime during the workday. And so as you run through the office back to your home, literally everything comes out of the woodworks to chop your head off. The only way you can die in this game is through decapitation, and it happens in so many different ways that there's actually an achievement section where you can fill out a death, what do they call it, a death-anac or something like that, a death almanac.
Jesus.
I'm sorry, game developers, you had a clever name for it that I forgot. But like, you, it actually catalogs all the different things that kill you throughout the game. So this is basically a like hardcore, somewhat platformer. I mean, it's, I got a few levels in and haven't jumped on a platform yet, but I have done a lot of running and jumping across a straight floor, trying to avoid through jumps and, of course, double jumps and just straight up running, avoiding all the things that can kill you. And, you know, as Death points out, because I guess Death is not used to giving people a little bit of a leeway. And so, which, by the way, I love the character Death. He does finger guns and also does the anime hands on the cheeks, like blushing.
Oh, God.
Type of thing when complimented. Yeah, it's, the game's graphics are adorable. But like, so all these bizarre things come out of the universe, etc. You know, somehow in that kind of, what's that movie series? The one where people keep dying because they avoided death.
Final Destination.
Yeah, that's it. So this is like Final Destination style. Basically, everything in the universe wants to chop this guy's head off because he's avoiding his fate or prolonging his life beyond his meeting with the Grim Reaper. So yeah, basically, as you go through the stage, like, everything looks fine, but as you run through, things will pop up, surprise you, chop your head off, and then you start that part of the stage over. And, you know, it just raises a death counter. There's no amount of lives that you have. It just keeps a score on, you know, how well you're able to get through the stage without dying as much. Just kind of saves your best, you know, I only died 30 times. And and that's actually no exaggeration. That's pulling from my first level stats. I did die 30 times in about a, I want to say, a 20-foot stretch of space.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, literally just one office with like eight computers in it out of like four or five in the level. Yeah, this, like, it's one of those things. It's kind of like, you know, those indie made games where the point of the game is to look innocuous. And then when you jump at something, like a spike comes out and then you're like, oh, I'm going to avoid that spike. And then you do the obvious thing. And of course that kills you even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So this is that kind of thing.
Nice.
Yeah. So
everything kills you.
Yes, everything kills you. And it gets more and more bizarre, like a Maui head on a skateboard can kill you. Sometimes a boulder will go sailing across the floor in your high-rise office, and you have to double jump over it. A nasty creature that looks like it's from Castlevania or like The Ring or something like that pops out of a computer screen or whatever and just like kills you from another dimension. All kinds of stuff happens in this game. And like at the end of the first stage, a helicopter rams into the building and you're falling, and everything, of course, as you're falling can knock your head off. And so you just have to like dodge in an auto run sort of, you know, sort of thing. Beyond that, there are collectibles in each stage. Everything has flavor text. It's a little bit like Earthbound in that way. So everything that kills you not only has a name, but also a story. So, and I don't want to, I'll only spoil stuff in the first level. So if you come across two puddles in the first level, like, you're like, oh, okay, well, the game tells me to jump over these. And then you see that one of them has a collectible. And so you go to get that collectible by timing your jump. And of course, as you're about to land in the pond, a shark jumps out of the puddle and bites your head off and then lands in the other puddle on the carpet. And oh, so you God. Look up, so you can look up this shark in the encyclopedia, and it is like, it must have been left over from the last Sharknado.
Oh, geez.
So, and the game's got jokes. Yeah, so it's, you try to get the collectibles, try to, you know, experience all of the deaths, and ultimately, I suppose, get this kid into his bed with his pajamas so that he can receive his final beheading.
It sounds ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and that's, I actually found that super refreshing in this kind of game, because normally, so the genre that this mostly reminded me of is the old, you know, silhouette challenge platformer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're the, so like the Limbo and other games I can't remember the titles of, but, you know, you just run through and try not to get killed, and you kind of have to memorize the stage, and, you know, eventually you get it, and you'll get through and be fine. I like that this game revels in its absurdity, and I also like that it's adorable and funny, but also, you know, of course, rage-inducingly difficult. And for some reason, okay, so I couldn't figure this out, and I'm sorry to the devs that I didn't get this figured out before review time, because I tried. There's a thing called goldfish mode, where you can do when you toggle it on, all the game tells you is that it makes the experience smoother or like less rage-inducing or something like that. But I didn't notice it doing anything. It recommends you don't turn it on, though, for the best experience. So I was like, oh, okay.
Weird.
Yeah, I got through a whole stage with it on, and I, you know, died many times and noticed no difference in difficulty. So I was like, oh, well, I'm turning this off then if they say not to use it, because it'll probably get me a bad ending or something. I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's a side note, is I didn't understand the goldfish mode, so maybe somebody can clarify that.
Maybe. But overall, $13 on it. What do you think?
$13 for sure. If you are the kind of person who likes the I want to be the guy style, like really difficult, unfair, like run and jumping kind of things where, you know, you're just it kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat until you memorize the stage and then you can just kind of breeze through it. Like that, yeah, that's a kind of game that definitely has its fan base, and I think this is one of the most respectable titles I've played that is in that genre. I personally liked it, and I'm not normally into super difficult style games like this, but this one, and I actually really like the story and dialogue. It touches on some philosophical stuff as well as being funny, so that's always my jam. So this is one I actually want to see the end of. And so for that reason, I say, yes, get it.
Nice. I might have to do that because it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Awesome. You got one other game to talk about. That's called Townsman, developed by Handy Games, published by Handy Games and THQ Nordic, released November 9th on the Switch for $19.99. From humble backwater to medieval metropolis, build the city of your dreams. Chris, what is Townsman?
Townsman. So for whatever reason, everything that I've played from THQ Nordic has been just like a knock, out of the park, like home run for me. This game, I hate to give it away so early. I was just shouting out THQ Nordic because, you know, I talked about Battle Chasers the other several months ago. So yeah, Townsman is a medieval style building and occasionally combat simulation. So it's basically like SimCity, but in medieval times. Now, the thing does occur in real time. Like, it'll almost remind you initially of Warcraft, with like a SimCity 2000 sort of isometric view of things going on there. But once you kind of get into it, you find out that it's really super deep, and it has like a lot of good stuff going for it. The presentation is really cartoony, which is interesting. It actually, the look belies, I think, how much there, you know, how much was actually put into this game or whatever. Like, I like the art style. It's just that I thought it would be a lot breezier. And then as soon as it started getting real deep, I was like, oh, geez, this is an actual serious game. For instance, so, you know, when you select your new game, it asks, you know, where you want to start, because you have the option of starting anywhere in the game that you want. There's 6 different tutorial scenarios, ranging in difficulty from easy to hard. And then you get into specific scenarios, which each one, you know, you start off with a set amount of buildings, and then you have, you know, these goals to reach throughout the stage. And then when you meet your ultimate goal, then you're done with the level. And then There's a sandbox style, which allows you to start with a castle and just build out from there and handle stuff as it gets thrown at you, I guess, endlessly. And there's 26 different settings for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And none of it is locked up, as far as I can tell. I mean, maybe there's some stuff that gets unlocked, but I was looking basically at 50 different things I could do as soon as I turned on the game. So I was like, man, kudos.
Keeps you busy.
Yeah. Anyway, so I went through the tutorial levels. And basically, yeah, you start off and it they have you learning how to build the buildings one at a time. So you start off with your castle, and your castle has a certain amount of people that work in it. Your starting amount is going to be four. So four people can work in your castle, and you when you look at the menu, it tells you what your people are doing. I think you start off with like two people or something like that. And you basically toggle each person to either be doing nothing, which is just, you know, a sleep symbol, or you can tell them to be from your castle. They go and gather things from other buildings, other suppliers. So let's say you build a building where somebody's going to chop trees. So you got a woodcutter's cabin. Well, the you need one person at least in that woodcutter's cabin. In the tutorial modes, they don't let you upgrade buildings. As you upgrade buildings, they let you have more people doing the work. So you get your woodcutter's shack. You send one person out there, and that person then becomes a woodcutter, and you toggle them on and off. What they'll do when they're on is they will go out into the forest, chop trees, bring them back to the woodcutter's shack, and there they will stay until there's just too much wood in that shack. And the other character that was behind in your castle, all they do is they go out to that woodcutter shack, gather the wood, and then bring it back to the castle, and then it stays in the castle storage. And from there, that's where you can use it to build new buildings, etc. So that's kind of like how everything goes. And the more materials that you make available through these buildings, and you actually increase the amount of people in your town by building townhouses. So the small townhouses brings two more people to be used however you wish. And then, like, a little later on, you get large townhouses that hold five people each. And so the thing about it, though, is that you can't just go out and build townhouse after townhouse, because there's a limited amount of food, and you have to build buildings to gather food. So it's really, it ends up becoming this balance of, like, I can only have this many people, and I have to keep each one of them busy so that they're always doing something and always gathering supplies that can be then used to, you know, achieve my goals. And as you keep clearing tutorial levels, they just keep introducing. By the third tutorial level, they have you sending people out to a mine to mine iron ore, and then they have you build a like a charcoal, like basically a thing that turns wood into charcoal. I don't know. I forgot what they called it. So you have to build that building, and then you have to build a smelter building, which will turn the which will combine the charcoal and melt the iron ore down into iron bars. And then you have to create a tool building, which is the place where they will turn those iron bars into tools, and those tools are what you use to build more advanced buildings. So, like, all of that just to get the tools to build, like, let's say a tavern. And so while you're doing all of this, you have to pay attention to a few different things. One is, of course, your money level, because the only way that your money goes up is through collecting taxes, which get assessed every now and then. And then eventually you get the ability to have a treasury and have tax collectors and things like that. They don't introduce that right away. But the other thing is that you can also set up trades, which allows you to sell off your excess stuff, because your castle can only hold so much stuff. So it's like, if you don't need, let's say, animal pelts from your hunters who are gathering meat, which, you know, increases your food supply, mm-hmm. but you're not using the pelts for anything, so you sell off the pelts. And you can only do that, like, the merchant will be there for, like, 3 real-world minutes, and then will be gone for, like, 6 real-world minutes. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, anything can happen at that point. And then, yeah, like, it's one of those things where it's like, you only, since you only initially have four people that are in your castle gathering all of the stuff across various buildings that you've built in your town, then you run the risk of, like, let's say you've got two people chopping wood all day. Well, they'll eventually fill up those houses with wood, and then they'll just be like, and then the game will actually warn you, like, oh, the building is full. And so you just kind of tell them to stop doing it and reassign them to something else. So you actually kind of balance switching your peasants around to do different jobs. And yeah, just like everything in the game is like that. And it's really well done as far as like getting the player to understand it gradually. Yeah. I guess that's why they have six different tutorial levels. And each one, by the way, was like 45 minutes to an hour.
Like, so it keeps you busy.
Yeah. This game, it keeps me busier than I think any like simulation RTS has that doesn't just like, you know, send you off to do whatever. It's like the specific goal of like one of them is, you know, just, you know, be able to make clothes, which, you know, you end up with farms where you have to tell the farmers, you know, you can have two farmers in a farm in the tutorial level, and you tell them to, you know, get cotton from sheep, or sorry, wool from sheep, and the wool gets taken over to a place that turns it into fabric. That gets taken to another place that turns the fabric into clothes, and then that gets taken over to the marketplace where it can be distributed. And you have to, like, go through the process of building each of these buildings and, like, gathering up the resources and the money to do it, all the while kind of, like, you know, keeping people happy, because their happiness will go down if you raise taxes too high, of course, or if they, you know, don't have the things that they want. And so it's all about keeping people happy. And then around all of that, there's a whole plot of, like, I guess as the ruler of this area, you have like this dark secret that, you're being exploited for. And so you have to like pay off this noble. And I think that you eventually have to fight him or something like that. Like, there's just so much going on in this game. And, yeah, it absolutely, while I was playing it, I was just completely sunk in. I was just like in a dent in the couch, just like, you know,
just absorbing it all in.
Yeah, it's just like the game like does so well about, like, you know, getting, you know, keeping you sort of doing one thing and juggling another and then juggling another. And at the same time, well, I mean, I'm sure this gets you know, it gets pressured, you know, a lot more pressure in the combat scenarios and the harder difficulties, but initially you're just like kind of relaxed about it. It's just like, well, you know, it's not like you have like a timer counting down. I mean, there are some that do have like a, you have to get through the winter kind of deal, but, yeah. Oh yeah. And by the way, the winter, you know, creates like the weather and different things create different like sort of obstacles that make you unable to do certain things. Like at some point you're not able to, harvest wheat, which then you have to turn into flour, which then you have to turn into bread to raise your food thing. Like everything almost is like three different processes. And, yeah. So yeah, this one gets really deep. The story is kind of, it's really, I don't know if it like gets super serious at any point, but it's really kind of a lighthearted take on the whole medieval thing. Soundtrack is really cool. It just kind of cycles between a few different songs while you're playing, so it doesn't just keep one BGM going at the same time. Although I will say, one of the three songs I think that were playing when I was playing had a kind of a pastiche quality in that it kind of sounded like the Game of Thrones theme. And I was like, I hope this isn't about to, you know, go in that direction.
You're just close enough.
Yeah, I know, right? It was like, it was kind of like the same chord changes, but not quite the melody. And I was just like, oh, I see what you did here.
Well, all that said, $20 on it. What do you think?
Oh yeah. $20. If you are into, building sims and, you know, eventually this does get into wartime stuff, but I mean, you can, it seems like you can just play it without really having to go through combat. For quite a while. I'm sure one of those 26 sandbox scenarios are going to be pretty peaceful. But whether it's peace or war that you're looking for, I mean, this game is got so much in it. I mean, at $19.99, I mean, you know, $19.99 kind of hits that that tier of, like, you know, probably the best thing that you can download, but not quite expensive enough to have a physical release. Yeah. So, you know, something like, I don't know, The Messenger or whatever, or Night in the Woods, just like stuff that, you know, people will talk about or in that, in that kind of range. So I think this is deserving to be in that range. I would not expect this game to be any cheaper for as much as they give you. So yeah, simulation fans, RTS fans. I mean, it's not as intense as like a wartime RTS, at least from what I played. I'm sure it gets that way. But for a simulation fan, like, you know, I'm an old SimCity fan, you know, the oldest of the old. And so this one pushed all those buttons. And I quite liked it. I'm going to be playing this one a lot more now.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Chris, always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Don't get your head chopped off.
All right. And finally tonight, we are bringing in our good friend Norg. George, how are you doing?
Fabulous.
Do you like how I'm at the point where I don't even bother introducing the game before you because I know things are going to go off the rails before we even start?
What? Come on! Have a little heart. I mean, seriously, it's almost like you've racially I feel profiled.
Well, you should.
You're right. I should, because I do that shit to you every single time.
Every fucking time. By the way, I want you to know, a couple episodes ago when you did your Bard's Tale review and the whole dropping bits thing, I've gotten a number of requests to actually get a clip of you saying, dropping bits!
Oh, no! Oh, no!
That is the trouble that you cause.
Among so many other types of trouble. I mean, honestly.
See, so what has to happen is you need to join us for a Thursday show.
Okay.
One of the live shows that we stream on Twitch, and you need to be there the entire show. So when someone drops bits, you just chime in with dropping bits.
Oh, I won't have a voice if I do that all night. Can I just record one for you and then you can hit the playback button?
That requires work.
I know. Damn, we're going to lose either way.
Yeah.
Damn it. Bastards. Bastards, the goat bastards.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, you are here to talk about a game.
Boy, am I. Would you like to introduce that game for us?
Yes, I would. The final game to talk about tonight is called Crashlands, developed and published by Butterscotch Shenanigans, released November 8th on the Switch for $14.99. Fight and tame alien beasts, craft resources into menacing weaponry, befriend the outlandish locals, and go toe-to-chin with a world-domineering maniac. George, what the hell is this game? Because it sounds crazy.
Toe to chin. Oh, my Lord. Okay, so right out of the gate, this is the most hilarious game I've ever played. I have never laughed so hard and so frequently and so repeatedly as I have at this game. I don't even know where to start with it. You start out. Okay, let's start at the beginning. You're a character. Your name is Flux, and you have a metal companion that is called the Juice Box for whatever reason. And your job is to deliver some packages. In the middle of delivering those packages, an alien creature decides that it wants your packages because it thinks it's batteries. It's not batteries, but it wants them anyway, and it blows up your ship in order to get them, and you crash land on this alien world. Yeah, get it. Crashlands. Yeah. So, exactly. So, every line of dialogue, or I would say maybe 98% of every line of dialogue and every interaction with every alien creature is hilarious. Sometimes subtly so, sometimes just over the top. And there's a lot of dialogue. I played through this game from start to finish. I have no idea what the completion rate was, but this was back when it came out on iPad. It was recommended by a friend of mine, so I checked it out, thinking, cool, I want to try a new game. And I got so sucked into this thing, because every corner contains some line of dialogue or a descriptive form of some component that make you just, you can't believe that they can be that consistently funny at Butterscotch Shenanigans. And they went all out on this. So I, what I meant to do is I wanted to write down some examples of some of the things that just cracked me up, but I left my Switch in the house and there are actually no online compendiums that I could find of any of the more choice dialogue. And I'm too lazy to go back in the house to get the damn thing. So you're just going to have to take my word on the comedy of it. I do remember at one point, there is a huge, huge crafting component to this game. Crafting is necessary for virtually everything to proceed in the game. And the descriptive line of one of the items, it was something kind of gross. And just the fact that you were even looking or holding the item and it ends with the description of, it is gross, you are gross. Just like, just kicks you right in the nuts just for even having that item. It, or something that kind of, just last night in the Switch version, I had to craft a thing that kind of looked like a jack-o'-lantern, but it was made from the body parts of an alien creature.
Oh God.
And I think in all caps, it was something to the effect of, who would come up with this? just gets you, right? And you never know what's coming next in the descriptions. It's so good. I cannot get enough of this. So having played through it start to finish on iPad when it came out way back when, now that it's ported to Switch, my big question was, how well did it port over? And the closest description I can think of is almost perfectly. You don't have the same screen real estate that you did on an iPad, but that doesn't matter. Full disclosure, I played only in portable mode. I never had an opportunity to play it on the big screen, which I typically don't with most games anyway, because I don't have a screen in my bed and my wife would be sleeping and it would get awkward, especially when I start giggling and chortling and she'd probably hit me with a pillow and say, go to sleep. So I play portable and you can quote me on that. So the screen real estate is smaller than was available in the iPad. I did not find that impacted anything at all. The best news was that the controls on the Switch solved most of the things I didn't like about Crashlands on iPad, which was my big fat meat fingers were constantly in the way of things I wanted to see or read. The I've bonus. Yeah. Dude, you've got the biggest freaking hands. I'm like, they're bigger than mine, I think. And I've got big beefy bass player. You should be a bass player. You should be a bass player.
Give me lessons.
Skype lessons. We're on this. I'll talk to you after the meeting and we'll get something arranged. So back to Switch. The controls turned it into an absolute joy to go through the process of exploring things. And it retained all of the touchscreen aspects of it. So in the event that you happened to plant a 12x12 field of some of the items that you need to harvest to do crafting, I wouldn't know anything about that. Instead of trying to get the Switch to line up on each of the buttons and hitting a button so that you can collect each thing, you just pop over to your field and tap the screen and you pick up the items and off you go.
Yay.
That is awesome. That it just literally made the game even so much more fun than it already was. So let me go through my usual three descriptors, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm going to start out with the ugly.
Okay.
Because I just want to get this out of the way. And this is a first. There's no ugly. There is not a darn thing about this game or this port or the experience that was awful. There wasn't a single crash. There wasn't anything that crippled gameplay. There wasn't a control that was unmanageable. There was nothing awful in this game. That's it and that's all. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, the only bad parts about the game, and this isn't necessarily specific to the Switch necessarily, it's more of just like a gameplay design thing, because of the explorative nature, is explorative a word?
It is now.
It is now. Because of the explorative nature of the game itself, the tedium does tend to set in after a while, because you do a lot of walking. It's like Lord of the Rings, the game. You're going to do a lot of walking. And sometimes that gets a little tedious. The thing that saves it, by and large, is just how pretty the game is and the different landscapes that you can get to. There are different landscapes as you progress through the game that you explore, and new creatures and new things to interact with. Sometimes the pacing can be a little bit slow, especially if in order to boost up your stats, you need to collect some items that are a little bit more difficult to find. And you just need that one tree with the little red bulbous Christmas ornament looking like things. And you've been scouring the planet for 20 minutes looking for just one, and you haven't found one yet. And it's getting a little irritating.
You could come back to the microphone now.
Do I have to?
Yes.
Hang on. I need some Slurpee. I have to wet the whistle. The humor only goes so far to help mitigate some of the pacing challenges that come up, especially when pacing is very frequently driven by items. There are a lot of quests in this game. Sometimes it's difficult to keep track of all of them and figure out where you need to be and when. That's about it where my experience of the bad is concerned. Then we get to the really long list of things that I loved about the game. The game explores like a Diablo game. I've seen that description online many, many, many times, and that's an accurate description. There's a lot to explore, total fog of war in any of the places that you haven't been yet. And then once you've explored it, when you pull up the map, you can see kind of an overview of those areas. You're able to put markers on the map for a compass to help guide you to where it is that you are going, if that's necessary. That's especially helpful when you die, which you will frequently, and you need to go and find your guts and your tombstone. By the by, there's an item that you can craft after you've collected, I think it's either 15 or 25 tombstones, as a monument to yourself for all of the deaths that you've experienced, which is hilarious. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This game makes you laugh out loud like nothing else ever. Period. They did something really cool. Because of all of the crafting that is involved and all of the items that you have to collect and all of the gathering that needs to be done, they've done a fabulous job of eliminating inventory management in this game. There is very little inventory management that needs to be done. Things can be separated into categories in case you're building something, or it's very easy to recycle items that you're no longer going to use anymore. And it makes it very easy to craft new items and keep new weapons or toss them very quickly. It plays really fast, and a lot of other games could learn something from that particular system. There is no experience system. Your character does have hit points, and hit points are driven by the pieces of body armor that you craft. You craft helmets, you craft chest plates, you craft gloves, and you craft leggings. And all of the descriptions of all of those items are also hilarious, because why wouldn't they be?
So there's a lot of crafting in the game.
There's a ton of crafting. The game is built on crafting in order to actually pretty much get anywhere in the game. So it's a necessary evil. If minimal amount of time spent in crafting things is something that makes you want to retch, puke, and vomit, maybe this isn't your game. But maybe you're an idiot and you should try to get over yourself and play this game.
Aww.
I just went for it. Did you hear how I did that? I did. Like, right in the nuts.
So instead of Crashlands, they could have called it Craftlands.
Oh, snap! Look who's the funny guy tonight! Look who's the funny guy tonight!
I try.
You horribly succeeded. You totally succeeded. Now, That was fantastic.
Anyway, what other good stuff is there?
Oh boy, I could and will keep going on. Enemy creatures do have a somewhat predictable pattern, and sometimes they break that pattern at times, but by and large, once you've had a couple of go-arounds and several deaths with a few of them, it's pretty easy to figure out what they're going to do next. And then after that, it just becomes a matter of strategy in terms of how you want to take them down. Even the names of the creatures are actually kind of funny. Just bizarre things like, what is that one called? I'm forgetting some of the names, but like the creature that I always take with me, because you can collect the creatures and hatch them from your eggs, from their eggs, and they will accompany you and attack monsters for you, which is pretty awesome.
Nice.
It's like, I think one is called like a Wampus or something. So I keep a pet Wampus with me at all times, and I named him Womp Womp.
Jesus Christ.
I did it. But then you've got these weird monsters like the Throke that looks like a jellyfish, but it plunges itself into the ground and shoots tentacles up from the ground at you, which slow you down, which give it the opportunity to kill you dead. My favorite name I think of a creature in the game is the Snorble, which is just a cute name for such an evil, disgusting creature. There's a creature that looks like... Did you ever see The Black Hole, the Disney movie The Black Hole from 1979?
Oh, God, it's been about that long since I've seen it.
Okay, but do you remember Vincent and Old Ben, the robots that accompanied the team in the game?
Yeah.
They kind of look like it, but the creatures in this game are called Saget. So, of course, when I named mine after I hatched it from its egg, it was Bob Saget.
It had to be.
Like, I wonder if they did that on purpose. Oh, I found a website that has some of the descriptions of some of the things in here. Okay. Oh, no, that's right. So the creature I was talking about is called a Wompit, W-O-M-P-I-T, Wompit. You can collect some of the creature's pieces and build a skinnery where you can, like, skin things. And its description is, now you're crafting with Wompit parts. Just boom. The hearth where you boil things up. It's warm and delightful. If only you had some hot cocoa to dip your toes into. The squave is like a lathe, but it's created from some of the monster parts. This can handle all kinds of abuse, and it spins. I'll find a couple more on here real good. The tumbler. Fully equipped for all your tumbling needs, this tumbler even comes with a cup holder, in the sense that you can put a cup near it. or the gastropestle, like the chemistry set you had as a kid, but morbid.
Oh, God. I had a chemistry set as a kid.
I did, too. Here we go. The Jack Weaver. It pulls together all manner of things, strips them into strips, and weaves them together into a weave. Brilliant!
Oh, jeez.
The crystal kiln takes an item called dusk crystals. Dusk crystals can withstand a tremendous amount of heat, which then makes them perfect for containing tremendous amounts of heat! Seriously. It can withstand a tremendous amount of heat, which makes it perfect for containing tremendous amounts of heat. And then there's the water pump, which will produce an endless supply of water balloons when placed in Savannah water. That's very direct. So yeah, that's a very tiny, tiny, tiny taste of some of the
crazy in the game.
Yeah. Or the refinery. Bump it up and process it down. This bad boy will turn all that blubbin' crude into whatever your little heart desires. Anyway, I could go on, and I will go on, but in a different direction.
Yes, sorry. More good.
No. Okay.
By the way, this episode is already over 2 hours.
So, yes!
So please don't make it three.
Okay. Last one. The Foundry. It runs pretty hot, but not very fast. You could probably beat it in a marathon. Or with a stick.
Oh, God.
See? Okay, so we talked about the enemies and the enemy names being absolutely hilarious. Sound effects are perfect. There, every sound effect is absolutely perfect, sometimes way over the top, and also perfect in given the circumstances that it is in this game. And the music is very minimalistic and extremely effective. There aren't a lot of themes to this game. It's a lot of ambience more than anything else. It's appropriate ambience. There is a recognizable melody at times if you listen very carefully, and a couple of really cool themes. But it's very background, and you're not going to get a chance to really study it too much because it's totally just not anything to what else is going on in the game. It makes great background sound, and that's what its purpose is. Ha!
What else?
That's it. Man, I don't know, because I'm at this point now where I'm going to continue playing it until I've beaten it again because it's like a compulsion. I can't stop. I know what's going to happen at the end, and I'm still going to go through and play it anyway because it's hilarious, and I like laughing, and laughing makes me feel good, and this game makes me feel good, and you should get this game. In fact, I am going to get this game for you after we're done somehow because you, and I'm talking about you, Joe, not you, the listener, because fuck you, but you, Joe. Joe, you, sir, are going to play this game, and I'm going to buy it for you. That's how much I am in love with this game and my need for you to laugh heartily.
Well, then I should ask you for $15. What is your verdict on the game?
$15. Absolutely buy this game. You will not spend $15 better on virtually anything, and that includes mind-altering drugs.
So is this a game that is enhanced by mind-altering drugs?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm not into that kind of thing, so I'll leave that to the experts that are more well-versed in those types of things.
Nice. Oh, George, you are insane. I love having you on.
Slurpee!
On that slurp, that is it for this episode. Thanks again, George, for coming on and chatting about Crashlands. Thanks to everyone who came on and covered their games. A lot of people on this show, a lot of news on this show. This was a big one for one of the weekday shows. So
this is the big one.
It was a big one. This is going to be like 2.5+ hours. It's
dude, God, that's man. Massive. I think I was at least an hour of that myself.
You're over 20 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not in Bard's Tale 4 territory, but no. We were getting close.
Not anywhere near Bard's Tale territory. Although it was fun streaming that review.
Oh, man.
That
all
was
the bits!
On that note, do you have any final words to end this episode?
Butterscotch! Shout out to Gods!
Thank you.